It's The Huddle. Powered in part by Reuben James, Main Street Burlington, RJSBurlington.com, Able Paint, Glass, and Flooring. You need it, they've got it. They are Able, AbleVT.com. And by Agave Taco and Tequila Casa, Maple Tree Place, Williston. Order online at AgaveVT.com. And by Grazer's Restaurant, Go Beyond the Burger, Maple Tree Place, Williston. And inside the 14th Star Brewery in St. Albans. Order online at Grazer'sVT.com. Now, it's The Huddle on 101.3 The Game, 101.3thegame.com, the 101.3 The Game app, and video streaming on Twitch at twitch.tv/1013TheGame.
What's up, everybody, for the final day, not all unaccounted for. Rich is here, Brady's here, Arnie still on vacation. I don't know how we should, are we celebrating our last day of being Arnie-less? I don't even know what we do now.
I have no idea what we should do. And got any ideas?
I mean,
should we just not be funny in any way and just be really serious and straightforward and just talk about sports the whole time?
No, I got some funnies in here, but I feel like we should do the thing that Arnie always does when I'm gone, because I'd like to be on this receiving end. What the four C's? Is this what he does when I'm gone?
What are the four C's? Complain, criticize, what is
it? Yeah, I was going to say, I've been gone for a couple of days in the last 4 years. He does this every time I'm gone, and you still don't know what they are?
No, I still don't know.
Aren't they complaints, compliments, criticisms, and something?
Oh, what's the other one?
He does this for every time I'm gone, he does this, the four C's. Complaints, compliments, criticisms, and something.
Yeah.
Concerns.
Well, that's it. Nice
so,
job.
So there you go. If you have a complaint, a compliment, a concern, or a criticism, you can let us know, because it's our last day of being Arnie-less.
And let's do a mountain. I almost said a Mount Everest. Let's do a, what is it?
Mount Rushmore?
Mount Rushmore.
Are you in the clouds today? Or you don't know the four C's. You don't know Mount Rushmore. Is it raining out, by the way?
Well, this is a weird day. This is one of those days meteorologists hate. It's sunny, and then it's pouring, and then it's sunny, and then it's pouring. So it's partly sunny and raining.
It was so beautiful this morning when I took our dog out at about 7:45.
Yeah.
It was one of the most beautiful days ever. The humidity was finally gone. The sun was blinding me. I got 9 holes scheduled today with Sean Parker and Tristan and Williston at 6:45. I better be able to get that in.
Oh, it's going to be. Where are you playing?
Links at Lang Farm in Essex.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if that, does that drain well? I don't know.
I don't know. It's a golf course. I would hope it drains well.
But I mean, do they have like special plugs like they do in baseball and football stadiums?
I don't know. I am not a golf course manicurist. Groomer?
I have no idea, but I would bet there won't be a lot of people out there because it was pouring for a while. But you should be all right. It's one of those days where, like I said, it's sunny and then it's pouring and sunny and it's pouring, so it's probably going to dry really quickly.
Dave and Sheldon has a criticism, I think. He wants to know why Rich seems so much happier on Mike and Mary in the morning than with us. Do you seem happier on Mike and Mary in the morning than with us?
You know what? You have to be kind of jovial the whole time you're on with them, because you walk in, and I'm only on for 3 minutes a week. It's every Wednesday at 8 a.m. for the one-liner Wednesday.
Yeah.
And you walk in there, and Mike is shrieking, and his arms are flailing, and he's wah, 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 going 100 miles an hour.
Do you want me to do that?
I have no idea how many cups of coffee that guy has.
Well, but I understand why, if you're a little bit down in the dumps on our show. We haven't had sports for 4 months. They told us sports were going to make us all happy again. Your baseball team stinks. My baseball team stinks. Between the two of us, the Mariners and Red Sox are a combined 2-8.
Oh, so
what is there to be happy about?
So Seattle lost again last
night? No. Losing is like 3-1. Getting pummeled is 10-2. That's what the Mariners did.
Okay.
They got beat 10-2. And, you know, it's funny because I gave you my 15 rules yesterday on how to love a bad baseball team. How many of them happened yesterday in the Red Sox game?
Oh, yeah. You were texting me, and we went through about 6 of them in about 5 minutes.
Rule number 6 was always expect a guy making his major league debut to dominate. Somebody named David Peterson shoved into the 6th inning for the Red Sox yesterday. Case in point.
Yeah, they got shut down by a 5th starter. And a lot of teams, including the Red Sox, don't even have a 5th starter, and they appear not to have a 3rd, 4th, or 5th, actually.
Major league debut for David Peterson.
Yeah, him.
Into the 6th inning. I told you. Rehab starters and or first-time major league debut guys, always expect them to dominate.
Yep.
Case in point.
And always double plays at the worst possible time.
Yes.
They had a beauty last night. Benintendi made a Been attendees. You think my head is in the clouds.
That wasn't that.
So I don't know what's going on.
If Cano had caught that ball on a line and he got doubled off, you'd be ripping him for that. That was a tough play for Benintendi.
It was a tough play for him to figure out what was going on. And they finally found a good angle on it. They showed about three replays from the Goodyear blimp somewhere in the next county. Then they found a good replay. I wasn't convinced that he didn't catch the ball. But to your point, that was rule number, what, 8?
Yeah, it doesn't matter what the rules are. They're in my 15 rules. And the other one I told you, on that same play, bases loaded, nobody out. You just have to accept that one run might score. And bases loaded, nobody out. So. Sox get a strikeout from Martinez, the weird double play, one run scores. Yeah. That's what happens.
Yeah, how about that? That sums up the year so far. Look, we're 5 games in, but of course, don't forget, 5 games is 1/12 of the season.
Yes.
I mean, it's time to win a game here at some point. But how about the Martinez situation? That sums everything up. Bases loaded, nobody out, and of all people in the whole league you don't want to deal with, it's JD Martinez. You're thinking, here it comes. It's about to be 4-3 in one swing of the bat. He strikes him out. On a 3-2 pitch, right down the middle.
Oh, my God. So. I know. And it's a lefty who's throwing like 87.
Yes.
I mean,
a rookie lefty making his debut against J.D. Martinez with the bases loaded.
Martinez should hit that ball to the moon.
Yes.
So, Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. Are you already done with the Red Sox? Rich, they told us that sports coming back would be good for our psyche. I was happier in quarantine at this rate.
That's saying something.
I was happier when we couldn't go anywhere and all there was 90 Day Fiancé on TV. Well, that was happier than what last night, 7:35, I watched the Red Sox. They're down like 6-1. I turn on the Mariners. Instantly, 2-0. Then 2-1. Then 6-1.
Yeah.
Over. Done. Good night.
And that's the problem right now with the Sox. And we could talk about this, and I'm sure we will as the show goes along. The thing about what's so unappealing about this team, other than the fact that they're 1-4 and have no pitching.
Everything.
Is the fact that the game is over by 8 o'clock. And in a lot of people, you know, for people like me who try to go to bed somewhat early because the alarm goes off at 3:45, you know, that's good news. But at the same time, you can't sleep because you're so mad at them because it's 7-0 by 8 o'clock at night.
And then
last night, I go, oh, fine, let me just see what else is on. Maybe there's a movie or anything. 90 Day, hell, I'll start watching 90 Day Fiancé pretty soon. The Celtics are playing. It's on NBC Sports Boston. And
they're getting beat by 100.
They were absolutely, and I understand nobody played. It was basically just the bench.
Yes.
But it looked like anybody could have beaten that. The Cabot High School JV team. Could have beaten them last night.
They allowed 80 points in the first half.
There was no defense. And every time Harden would get the ball, I thought of you. Yes. Give me that line again.
Harden's only move was this. Jab, step, pump fake. Jab, step, pump fake. Jab, step, throw the arms up for a foul, get the call, and one.
And you were right. He bitches about every single call. This is a game that means absolutely nothing. It's a scrimmage in front of 7 people.
I'd like to know what's up with his hair. It looks different than it did before.
But he's complaining about every single call. And some of them I didn't even see, but that's exactly what he did. Every trip down the floor, and the Celtics would just lay off him, and he'd hit the shot. I think he had 30 at the half.
It's ridiculous. We'll get into the Celtics inside the top 4 and 4. I can't wait to talk with Buster at 5 about the Red Sox, because I can't figure out what exactly is happening. I don't know if it's Ron Renicki, who I like. I don't know if it's Chaim Bloom, who's imparting the analytics, but I can't figure out why there's a 100% platoon split between Moreland and Chavis. Yeah. I can't figure out why Bogaerts has 2 days off in the first 5 games of the year. He's not playing tonight for 6 games of the year. I don't know what's going on. They're 1-4. They're taking on Jacob deGrom, and their second best hitter is out of the lineup. I can't figure this out.
Yeah, and they were ripping him on the pregame show. They're already ripping Renicki. The guy's played, and this was before his 5th game as the manager of the Red Sox, about the fact that Moreland, who has 2 home runs, which is about half of the entire team's total right now through 4 games, wasn't in the lineup last night. They're definitely platooning, because as soon as the next guy came in, they put Moreland in there to pinch hit. He struck out.
I guarantee you. That is a Chaim Bloom thing. I can't account for Bogaerts, but that's definitely a Bloom thing, and I can't say that I get it. I understand they want Moreland in there against righties, and they want Chavis in there against lefties. I thought Chavis going into last year was like the organization's top prospect. You're now telling me he's incapable of hitting right-handed pitching, and I get that he's struggling. I don't think he has a hit all season right now. I understand he's struggling, but If this kid was one of the top prospects in the organization last year, why is he not playing? I've seen enough of Mitch Moreland for my life. He did great things for them in 18 when they won the World Series. I don't need to watch more of Mitch Moreland. If we're trying to get better for the future, why is Chavis, why are we not right. getting answers?
I know, and it's funny because with Moreland, it's a little frustrating. He tends to do two things I notice every year. He gets in streaks, especially streaks of power, which is all the more reason why he should be in the lineup. I understand he's a 250 frustrating hitter who strikes out a ton. But when he gets in these little hot streaks, and as I said, he's got two home runs in two games that he started, I think it's an egregious mistake to not have him in there against anybody.
Well, we'll talk with Buster at 5. We'll talk with Ernie Duncan at 3:25.
Nice.
More thoughts on the Patriots. But first, this is where I really wanted to start. I didn't intend to start by us just complaining here. But again, the four C's are going on.
We're so good at it.
The complaints, complaints, criticism, compliments, or whatever the hell the fourth one is that Arnie always has. Complaints, compliments, criticisms.
Constructive.
No.
We've already
concerns.
Forgotten. That's the one.
So if you've got
At some point, I'm going to write these down.
If you've got those, you can let us know. This is where I really want to start, though. Did you see the benches clearing incident last night between the Dodgers and the Astros?
Yeah, and it's a little weird calling it. I mean, it was benches clearing, but only in the sense that both benches emptied.
Yeah, no
punch. Talk about a social distancing bench clearing.
So if you missed this, Joe Kelly was wild last night.
No way.
3-0 count, he throws behind Alex Bregman.
At 96.
Yes, throws behind his head.
Yes.
Then, later in the inning, two batters later, he throws a slider up near Correa's head, then eventually K's Correa. Then they start jawing back and forth. There's some not-so-nice pleasantries exclaimed between the two sides. And now people wonder, did Joe Kelly throw at the Astros in retaliation for the 2017 World Series in which the Astros were sign-stealing? I guess, Rich, if you do believe he was throwing at him, should Joe Kelly have been the guy to exact revenge, considering he wasn't on the 2017 Dodgers team that got, quote, screwed by the Astros?
And Joe Kelly is such an enigma when it comes to this situation. This is not the first time he's done this. He broke Hanley Ramirez's ribs with a fastball in 2013. I think it was in the NLDS that year.
Yes.
And as you said, you remember the Tyler Austin situation.
Yes.
With the Yankees in 2018.
Former Red Sox hero, Joe Kelly, for that.
Yes. In fact, he started the Joe Kelly Fight Club,
yes.
As I recall. I saw people wearing T-shirts. So he's an enigma in the sense that he's wild. But the fact is, I have a concern with Joe Kelly and whether he meant to do it or not. The fact that it went flying past Bregman's head at 96 miles an hour on a 3-0 pitch, no less, is very concerning to me.
Yeah, look, I've told you that I have believed in the unwritten rules. I have thrown at people on purpose. I never threw hard enough to really injure somebody. I certainly never threw at anybody's head, though. I've hit people's backside. I've hit people in the back. I've jawed at people. I've never thrown near someone's head.
In the Green Mountain League?
I've never thrown at anyone in the Green Mountain
League. Okay, because I want to hear names.
No. I've never thrown at any of those guys. But Joe Kelly should not. I believe he threw at Bregman.
I do not
believe he threw at Correa. Joe Kelly was wild. I mean, he was all over the place. And Joe Kelly, remember a couple of months ago, he broke his window practicing a changeup in his backyard. I mean, Joe Kelly is wild. So I believe that he was wild. And by the way, the pitch he threw up near Correa's head was an 86-mile-an-hour slider. If I'm going to hit you, I'm going to hit you with a fastball and something that's going to leave a mark. So I do believe he threw at Bregman, though. Completely inappropriate. However, what also is inappropriate is Joe Kelly wasn't on the team. Joe Kelly was not on the Dodger team that was screwed. I get he was on a Red Sox team that year that also lost to the Astros. He won a World Series the next year with the Red Sox. So he already has his ring. If someone was going to exact vengeance on the Astros, it should have been someone who was, on the roster for the Dodgers that year.
Maybe so, but don't you expect Joe Kelly to be that guy? He is so beloved by his teammates no matter where he's been, which makes it amazing. He never seems to stick in a place for very long. I just think he's the kind of guy that could be designated as that guy. I just don't want throwing 100-mile-an-hour fastballs at people's heads.
If he was going to be, quote, designated, then it makes sense because he is wild enough inherently for it to be believable that it slipped. He does throw extremely hard, so if you were looking to leave a mark, he would be the guy that does it. But if I were a Dodger that's still on the team, Kenley Jansen comes to mind, I would want that to come from me. Like, I'd want it to be Kershaw. Now, I know he's not pitching right now, but Kershaw would want a chance at it. I'd want a chance at it if I were Jansen, who was the closer, who didn't look great in that World Series, as I recall. Joe Kelly doesn't get to come and settle my score. Joe Kelly got a World Series ring the next year, and he beat the Houston Astros in 2018. He's already got his ring, so if we're gonna do this, and I'm a Dodger player, I want to do it myself.
Well, it's pay-up time now for Major League Baseball. This is fascinating on so many fronts because MLB has to make a decision here. They made it very clear in the COVID times, you do not leave that bench. We do not want to see 75 people congregating and certainly, you know, throwing each other to the ground and everything else. So they are going to have to make a statement here. I have a feeling Joe Kelly's going to get hit pretty hard on this situation. Maybe not clobbered, but I think he's going to get a fine. He might even get a suspension. Because MLB right now needs to say, you will not leave the bench. So there's your teams getting in trouble. And the other thing is they made very clear they do not want to see people throwing at the Astros after that cheating scandal.
Well,
and so this qualifies for both of them.
The players were wearing masks. All the bench players that I saw come out had masks on. The coaches had masks on. They've never really gotten anyone's face. The players were actually pretty tame in this whole thing. And even Correa and Kelly, where they were jawing,
yes,
they weren't right in each other's face. So if there's a suspension, to me, it's not for the leaving the bench because nobody really broke any rules there in terms of getting in someone's face. No punches were thrown. No brawl was had. You're right. If someone's going to get punished, it's going to be Kelly. Do you miss any of that Joe Kelly attitude in Boston, though? Do you miss any of that aggression? Maybe he's wrong. But Boston people like that guy with the attitude. Do you miss any of that?
Oh, absolutely. Anyone starts the Joe Kelly Fight Club. I mean, he loved it. And he was always very talkative, win or lose. And I mean, you remember some of those games in 2018. They went on to win the World Series, but he had a hideous stretch where he couldn't. He'd just go out there and walk everybody and they'd get him out of there. But everybody, unlike many bad Red Sox pitchers of the last 50 years, and there have been a lot of them, in fact, several of them this year already. Joe Kelly was never really panned by the fans. They seemed to like him, but he was an absolute bonfire every single time he came in.
He is likable in that he's talkative and that he's got some accountability and he says what's on his mind. Remember, he was great, though, for stretches in Boston also. But he was terrible for a stretch of a couple of different... We've been doing the show now together so long, I can't remember all the exact years, but he was bad for certain portions of the time that we've been together. I just have a problem with him being the one that exacts vengeance. I'd understand, even though I don't advocate for this, if you want to go in a little bit late on a double play and it's Corey Seager or somebody who was there, then okay. If you want to throw at somebody, hit them in the back and you're Kenley Jansen and you were there, okay. But Joe Kelly wasn't there. He was part of a Red Sox team that got beaten by those Astros, but then he beat the Astros the next year and got a ring. Why does he get to go and do this?
Right. Well, maybe he didn't. I mean, that's the thing. That's what you can only guess, and he's not going to tell you, although you know someday he's going to write a book and then tell you exact. I'm just suspicious on the fact that it was a 3-0 fastball.
Oh, the fastball at Bregman, that I believe was intentional.
Right.
Correa is the one who was really upset because of the slider near his head. That I don't believe was intentional. He had thrown a lot of bad. I watched his entire inning. He threw a lot of garbage sliders that were way up and in, way down and away. He couldn't find his release point. Yeah. That I don't believe.
Well, I think baseball's going to send a message, at least on the Bregman one. That's the one you can't excuse. I mean, it's Joe Kelly. I understand he's going to be wild, and he certainly was all over the map last night. The other thing to think about that may work in his favor is the fact that neither of the batters were hit. And it's a good thing they weren't hit. You know, when you think about it, although the slider to Correa wouldn't have been the end of the world. But if he had ever hit Bregman with that fastball, Bregman wouldn't be playing for a while.
Breaking news for the New York Giants. It actually comes to us from Kevin in Essex on the text line, and now I've confirmed it on Twitter as well. Former Patriots offensive lineman, current Giants offensive lineman, Nate Solder, is opting out of the season in 2020. Now, he says, our family has health concerns, most notably our son's ongoing battle with cancer, as well as my own bout with cancer. We also welcomed a new addition to our family this spring, a baby boy. With fear and trembling, we struggle to keep our priorities in order, and for us, our children's health and the health of our neighbors comes before football. We fully recognize that being able to make a decision like this is a privilege. So rapid reaction there is, if you're looking at it from just a practical standpoint, completely understandable. Mm-hmm. I mean, Nate Solder, it's well documented his son's battle with cancer. I think part of the reason why he chose New York is because of its proximity to Boston, where the doctors that he had already been seeing in New England were. So that's part of the reason why He went to the Giants, his own battle with cancer. You have to respect this decision. He's, quote, a high-risk player.
No, I'm surprised it even took this long. I thought he would be the first one out the door. Absolutely, when you hear stuff like that. And, I mean, it's like Dante Hightower, same sort of thing. There's been that sort of thing in his family. There's a newborn. And I mean, it's just – there. Really, it's – we haven't gotten into a situation here where somebody has just opted out and you look and you go, why? You know, there just hasn't really been that case. All the Patriots yesterday had valid reasons. I don't even want to use the word excuses because that's not what they are, especially in a Nate Solder situation. And, you know, say what you want, but it hasn't gone real well for him in New York either. So
in terms of what this is for the Giants football-wise, you hate the idea of losing a veteran, but Solder hasn't been particularly good. So this is going to save the Giants money because Solder is a high-risk player. He's going to accrue a year of NFL service towards free agency, so the Giants are going to get a year off of his contract, essentially, out of this as well. This is going to end up financially being a good thing for the Giants. They've got Andrew Thomas, who they drafted in the first round, who they just came to agreements with. Will Hernandez, who they took out of UTEP last year. They're the guy that they got from the Browns, Zeitler, is part of the OBJ Jabril Peppers trade. So the Giants' line is being fortified. There was even a chance that Nate Solder wasn't going to get the kind of playing time he was expected anyway. So football-wise, this may not be the worst thing for the Giants. Financially, it's going to be a great thing for the Giants. But more importantly than all of that is just Nate Solder's family and Nate Solder's happiness. And that is what he's prioritizing, and I commend him for it.
Now, when's the deadline here?
August 3rd.
Okay, so that's next Tuesday?
Yeah.
No, I'm not sure.
Because we got 31 days in July, I get screwed up here. So it looks like
next Tuesday. Next Tuesday. Rams fan Ralph says 26 players to date. So don't you kind of get the feeling this is just beginning? I mean, I'd be very surprised if we didn't hear double that over the weekend.
I don't know, because I don't know how many players fall into the category that, again, Solder does. One, are there high-risk players, right? Cannon was a high-risk player for the Patriots. Yep. Solder, a high-risk player for the Giants. So those guys make sense. How many guys are there like that? I don't know. I saw players opt out for asthma and some respiratory issues. But also, Solder's got rings, and Solder's got money. So again, you're seeing this coming from veteran players that have families who they are prioritizing, whereas not all young players do. And they're also established in terms of financial well-being. And in terms of, in some cases, they have a Super Bowl ring. So there will be more, I think, as you see more veteran players get coronavirus tests back. There might be some fear among players where a couple people opt out just because of the rash of tests that come back positive. But double, I don't know. That feels too high, but again, I don't know.
Yeah, but if 26 turns into 52, that's not, I mean, 26 right now isn't a ton. I mean, it's just, I think everybody's kind of reeling from yesterday when all of a sudden all, you know, half the Patriots, it seemed like, just all went away. So Rams fan Ralph says the opt-out day is the 4th. So it's a little bit later in the week. By the way, Dave in Richmond said, if you were in a situation, would you throw at Arnie's head?
I've wanted to throw elbows at Arnie in terms of basketball, but yeah. I can't even imagine Arnie being on a baseball field, nevertheless getting a chance to throw his head.
Certainly as a big target, if nothing else. You could at least use that as an excuse if it happened. You just say, I'm sorry, you were hard to miss.
I'm sorry, I'm reading here. I'm trying to figure out. See, August 3rd is when I was pretty positive the date was. Well, so Rams fan Ralph says the 4th.
Well,
but
it's sometime next week, and whenever it is, we'll find out.
Yeah, but I hate not knowing things. I don't want Rams fan Ralph to know over me.
I know. I know you hate being wrong. So do I, but only on things like geography.
You talk about I'm going to get that answer in a second. You talk about Arnie being on the field with me. I would never tell this story around Arnie.
This is your last chance.
I know.
He's back tomorrow.
One of the most embarrassing moments of my life is, so after when I was in Albany, they hired an old rock DJ to come and host a show, right? And that's the job that I wanted, but I was there for a couple more months after, before I left. He was just the biggest loudmouth in the world. He didn't know anything about sports. Anything. He was there solely for shock value. It was completely a terrible hire. He was gone 5 months after he got there. Was not a fit. But all he wanted to do was do bits. So he wanted to come out and hit against me. 65 years old. But all he had to do was make contact. He didn't have to get a hit. He didn't have to hit it far.
Just stick the bat out and hope for the best.
So I supplied him with a 75-mile-an-hour fastball down the middle. And he, had a swinging bunt to third base, and then he just went on and just mocked me for like an entire week. I'm like, old man, I'll put it in your ear hole if you don't shut up.
Would you?
No, because
ear hole is that's your head.
Yeah, no, I just said I wouldn't throw it in his head. I'd put it in his back though, and
put it in a different hole,
and not feel guilty about it. I mean, my God, but that was like the worst day of my life is that I had to deal with this.
Have you ever been in a situation where you really wanted to drill a guy? Even at like the Green Mountain League, I mean, where a guy was just mouthing off or something.
Oh, I've drilled three guys in my life and missed one too.
Was that in college?
Yeah. College, okay. I got the middle finger sign from the catcher. So instead of one for the fastball, it was the middle finger, which meant hit him.
That's great.
And I missed. Threw it in. No, just too, not in enough. It was almost a strike.
I would think that would be a hard thing to do. I mean, you have it's a college batter, a relatively thin guy, I would think.
I was afraid
of a tough target.
I was afraid of my ERA. Last thing I want to do is put a guy on first base.
That's true, and that would count if he came around to score.
I hit a guy when I was 18 because it was a 3-0 count, and the guy did a little league maneuver where he stood around and pretended like he was going to bunt. He's just waggling the bat there. I'm like, bro, this is not 9-year-old baseball. You're down 10 to nothing. Shut up. I threw it in his back. I had a guy, my second baseman got cleated once by a guy, so I threw at him. And then the next time he came up, and I think I threw at one more guy. Maybe it was only two that I hit, and the third one I missed.
15 years of baseball, from T-ball all the way up through college, I pitched 2/3 of an inning. I hit the first two batters, and one of them yelled, F you. I almost started a brawl.
What age was that?
And then I struck out the next two guys.
Oh, nice.
So two hit batters and two strikeouts. That's my entire career.
Did you get out of the inning?
Yes.
There you go. Yes. So you came on with one out.
And we were losing by about 16 runs.
Sorry, Rams fan Ralph. It is the third, not the fourth. I knew I was wrong.
All right, well, he says SB Nation says it's the fourth.
Well, SB Nation was wrong. It's okay. Wow. They can be wrong as long as Brady's not wrong. It was August 3rd.
They're not allowed to be wrong. They're big.
Well, not as big as 101.3 The Game, woo-hoo! Apparently. So Nate Solder out of the Giants season. We'll have more on that as we get more info coming outside. We'll get to it again in the top four at four. But, Rich, let's take a break. When we come back, amid the coronavirus pandemic, amid our bad baseball teams, there's actually some good news, a good story. Former UVM basketball star Ernie Duncan, he comes on, he tells it to us next on Audible on 101.3 The Game.
In the car, on your computer, on your phone, on your Amazon Echo, and video streaming on Twitch. There's always a way to listen to the show.
I think you might want to listen.
It's The Huddle on 101.3 The Game.
Welcome back. You're in The Huddle right here, 101.3 The Game, 101.3thegame.com. Our final Arnie-less day on this Wednesday. The big guy will be back tomorrow after he's had his, 100 years off, it feels like. So
I don't know whether to laugh or cry.
So let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line. And a guy who's lucky he's not talking to Arnie, because Arnie would try to challenge him to a three-point contest again.
Arnie and Ernie.
It's former UVM basketball star Ernie Duncan. Ernie, how are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Good. I appreciate you joining us. And a good week for you, because you announced this week that you've launched your own basketball training company, and you're going to do it with your brother Everett and former Catamount Ethan O'Day. Tell us a little bit about the inspiration for Ernie Duncan LLC.
Yeah, so it's definitely an exciting week for me thus far. And yeah, so I recently launched Ernie Duncan Hoops LLC, and the main goal of this is just to kind of give back to people that have given to me. And it's not just in Burlington. It's something that I want to kind of grow in Evansville, Indiana, too. And that's kind of where Everett kind of comes in. And he's kind of like the head trainer there in Evansville. And just doing everything we can to kind of grow basketball here in Vermont, and obviously keep growing in Indiana. But it's something that I've kind of honestly wanted to do since I kind of stepped on campus at Vermont. And that is to grow basketball here and continue to make Vermont kind of know basketball and keep growing that thing here.
Ernie, when you say you want to grow basketball in Vermont, I mean, specifically, what do you mean by that? Get more kids interested?
Make it better. Something that, coming from a very rich basketball state in Indiana, I noticed, obviously, I would say the talent level isn't as good as I think it can be. And so the first day I stepped on campus and started to work at Coach Becker's camps, I realized, maybe something that I can do here when my career is over is be an option for these kids. Give every kid here in Vermont an option to train with somebody that has played Division I, and give them a chance to grow their game and kind of, find a way to love the game like I love the game. So just be an option for every kid, and not just in Vermont, but someone that people can go to in the Northeast.
Arnie, are you? Arnie, there you go. See, I'm already anticipating Arnie's entrance back tomorrow. Arnie, is coaching something you're interested in personally, or is the goal someday to have enough people working under you where you can just kind of oversee everything?
I would say coaching is in my future. I don't know at what point, but I do think down the road I will be involved in coaching. If it doesn't happen and I'm kind of a trainer and I continue to grow what I'm growing and build this brand up, then that's what happens. But if an opportunity were to arise and, like, I could get into, you know, college coaching or, you know, high school coaching, whatever it is, I think that would be hard to pass up. But right now I'm just trying to build my brand up as a trainer, as a coach, as a leader sort of in the community, and see where that kind of takes me.
So, Arnie, did you study places that do this kind of thing around the country to see what works and what type of business works?
So there's a lot of, with social media, there's a lot of, like, basketball trainers out there, and I've followed for a long time now some of the lead ones. Like, DJ Sackman is one that's located in New Jersey, and I've kind of been following what he's been doing, and he's sort of an inspiration for me, and I possibly could and want to be someone like him. So I've looked into a lot of things, and plus I've grown up in a lot of basketball academies and things like that in Indiana, so I've always had that to kind of look on, and maybe I can be part of something, you know, bringing something like a facility to Vermont one day. Cause I think it's important that kids, especially during these winter months where the kids can't go outside and train, I do think it's important that these kids have a place to go and train during these winter months and continue to work on their skills.
Does this become the full-time business for you right away, or does it start out as supplementary for you?
No, this is full-time for me. I have enough kids to where I'm doing this every day, and I'm enjoying this every day, and I'm pretty much, I start at 7:45 every morning with my first client, and I'm gone pretty much all afternoon. And it's something that's, I don't even look at it as a job, because I love sports, and I love working with kids, and I love, you know, seeing them get better, and, you know, gives me a good feeling with that, and, you know, I don't even consider it a job, to be honest with you.
He's so busy, he needs me to Uber him around.
Yeah, true.
So.
That's actually happened. Yeah,
yes, it has happened. He's like, hey, that's Arnie Duncan in my back seat. What are you doing here?
He says that's Rich Haskell in my front seat. That's what he says.
Arnie, you ended up not going to play internationally or professionally. Was that always the goal for you?
I wouldn't. Yeah, I mean, I gave the overseas thing a big thought.
Yeah.
And I've continued to give it a big thought. But with what's going on today with COVID, and I have a lot of good things happening in my life, and I'm very happy here in Vermont at the moment. I have a lot of good things working in my direction, so I really don't want to mess with my happiness. And that's something that I kind of learned, you know, with my time at UVM, is when you're happy, you kind of keep riding that wave and don't really interrupt that happiness.
Yeah. Former Catamount hoop star Arnie Duncan with us here on the Huddle, 101.3 The Game, 101.3thegame.com. Just launched his new basketball training facility, Arnie Duncan Hoops LLC. Looking forward to that. His brother Everett's involved, Catamount. Former Catamount teammate Ethan O'Day is involved. What kind of training do you do, Arnie? Is it only shooting? Is it only for guards? You got separate ones for guards and big guys? What do you got?
Yeah, so with the big guys, I typically am kind of giving that all to Ethan O'Day. Obviously, he's honestly one of the best bigs that ever rolls through UVM. So if you're a big man, I send him right to Ethan. And I continue to work with my big men because it's important to give them guard skills. But I pretty much adjust my workout for the athlete. You know, if the athlete's skill level is low, I really focus on some of the basics. If their skill levels are high, kind of just build my workout on the athlete and whatever is best to make them the best athlete possible.
So what about if someone wants to get in touch with you and have you train them and such?
So you can go right to my email, or not email, my website at ErnieDuncanHoops.com. All the information's on there, all the contact page, email, all that. Just go right there and you'll be able to contact me directly.
Well, Arnie, I'll get you out of here on two quick questions. Well, a word hasn't come out yet on basketball season from the America East. I can only imagine that it's going to be altered in some way. Could you imagine trying to go through a college basketball season with what's happening right now and the idea of playing less games than usual or not traveling as much as usual? Can you even imagine that?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel for all the athletes, and specifically, obviously, the basketball athletes. It's definitely hard. If I was in their shoes, it would be sort of hard to almost motivate myself every single day to, you know, get up and go work out, because obviously there's a chance of maybe not being a basketball season, or who knows right now, but it would be hard and kind of, it's sad to think about that there may not be a season. But if there is, you know, if there's, are they going to allow fans in Patrick? You know, nobody really knows what's going to happen, but it's definitely unfortunate, you know, but they can't really do anything about it right now, and they definitely should just focus on trying to get better every day and let and control what they can control.
You know, I don't know that he's going to opt out because it's $34 million, but I know that you're a Pacers fan. Do you want to see Gordo? Do you want to see Gordon Hayward head back to your Pacers?
Yeah, absolutely. There's some big issues with Victor Oladipo, I guess, right now with the Pacers, which I'm kind of worried about. But I absolutely would be all on board to see Gordon Hayward back home in Indiana where he belongs. He doesn't belong in Boston. I know his head coach, his college coach is a coach or whatever, but he belongs to be back home and be able to go get a home-cooked dinner anytime he wants.
Is he a hometown hero in Indiana to you guys growing up?
Not until he got to a Final Four run with Butler. He started my love with Butler, that's for sure. I loved Butler growing up because I saw what he was doing. I saw Coach Stevens and kind of the rise of Butler basketball, but he was a big part of me really liking Butler basketball.
Ernie Duncan, he just launched his own basketball training facility, Ernie Duncan Hoops, LLC. You can contact him on his website. Ernie, give us the website one more time.
ErnieDuncanHoops.com.
Ernie, we appreciate it, man. Good luck, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, there he goes. Ernie Duncan, I shouldn't say facility because he's mobile on this, so it's a company rather, not a facility. But I love to see guys and girls, especially young people, who want to give back and who want to stay here. Rich, you always make the comment about people just come in here and they just want to leave. It's always just a stepping stone. Not for Ernie Duncan. Yeah. I thought that was pretty mature, and I liked hearing that.
Yeah, I mean, Evansville, Indiana, and the whole family's there, and he's got all his brothers there, and they all grew up together there, and for him to stick around is interesting. I wasn't kidding when I said he climbed into the back of my Uber a few months back. I was like, well, that's cool. You're staying around. And geez, we're down to one Duncan now, aren't we?
Yeah, Robin's still here. And, you know, and that's a guy who Ernie could have played overseas. You know, look, I don't know at what level. I don't know what league, in what country. Ernie Duncan's good enough to play basketball somewhere professionally in this world. And he said, you know what? You don't mess with happiness. And his battle with depression and thoughts of suicide were well chronicled by Alex Abrami in the Free Press in a really powerful story a little over a year ago or so. So when he says you don't mess with happiness, that's something that you believe. And that's coming from a place of experience that Burlington makes him happy. And it's good for him that he has found happiness, has found peace here, and has roots here now.
Yeah, he's definitely preaching to the choir on that one with me. I mean, you know how I feel about that. Just whatever makes you happy, do it, man. And I think it's great. And you know, I think so many of these players, just especially the players that come from faraway places, not that Evansville, Indiana is, you know, Latvia, but I mean, you know, my point being that that's still quite a ways from here. And he uprooted himself and he left his family, and turns out half his family came with him. But for him to finish here and then just decide to stay, we've seen that a lot over the years.
Well, it's good to see Ethan O'Day involved locally. Good to see Everett Duncan involved in the Indiana chapter of this. And I'm curious for you guys in the text line, because I know there's a lot of you, 802-655-6672. How hard is it to start your own business? I mean, really, how hard is it to start your own business? There's a lot of you out there that have done it. I don't think that I could do it. And Ernie's doing it. Now, Ernie's a little bit older than most people who graduate, because I think he had a year off in there, maybe a register. But Ernie's a little bit older, but he's still less than 25 years old. That's a big undertaking for someone that young.
Well, Ben and Jerry at the old gas station at the corner of St. Paul and College Street back in the 70s.
That worked out okay for them.
Yeah, they're doing all right.
So again, hardest part of starting a business, how difficult is that? I'd love to know. And I should mention this on the Nate Solder situation we talked about 15 minutes ago. Giants offensive lineman Nate Solder opting out of the 2020 season. I had said that a year is going to come off his contract. That is incorrect. What happens when these players opt out is what they call it, is the contract tolls, which basically means it rolls over, it's on hold. So Nate Solder will still have 2 years left on his deal. Just like Dante Hightower for the Patriots was going to have 1 year left on his deal, he will still have 1 year left on his deal. The Patriots can cut him next year if they want it, no penalty. Solder still due $6.5 million next year.
What I was reading about tolling is that the player gets $150,000 to not play this year and then gets whatever he was owed next year. So, in other words, Hightower gets $150,000 this year to sit out. How's that for a life? And $8 million next year if he plays.
Close. A non-risk player basically is getting Hightower's getting a $150,000 advance. He's losing, so he's getting $150,000 right. less next year.
Right, and he's not, okay, I get it, but he's obviously not getting $8 million this year.
Correct. Nate Solder, because he's a high-risk player, is getting $350,000. So he is getting more, but it's still an advance on next year's salary. But
I like $350,000 to not do something.
He will have 2 years left on his deal. They said what? That's coming next on the Huddle. 101.3 The Game.
This is Joe Castiglione. Keep listening to the Red Sox all season on 101.3 The Game.
Whoa. What did he say?
New England, in 30-plus years before Tom Brady, had 8 double-digit winning seasons. They were irrelevant.
He really said that?
I got a tight end in prison. My owner is being brought up on charges. My coach maybe was spying on somebody. Like, these are the things they deal with.
It's They Said What?
I'm spitting hot fire this morning.
On The Huddle, on 101.3 The Game.
Welcome back. You're in the Huddle, 101.3 The Game, 101.3thegame.com. Thanks to Ernie Duncan for joining us. People on the text line saying starting your business, very difficult.
Yeah,
so good for them. Yeah, you and I tried to I tried to make some money on my Brady and the Bunch podcast. That proved hard. So I did 65 episodes, but it was hard to try to make any money on it.
Well, it's funny. I don't mean, keep me in memory. I don't want to keep bringing Uber up, but I mean, when I'm doing Uber Eats, I go to these restaurants that just opened up, and I'll go there, like on a Saturday, I'll go there at like 8 o'clock in the morning to pick something up. And then I'll go back at 8 o'clock at night after a long break of not doing it. It's the same person at the counter.
Wow.
And they have the same two or three people working there all day. You put in absolutely insane hours, and it may or may not pay off.
Unbelievable. Well, let's get to They Said What.
They Said What?
Tom E. Curran, not Tom Karen. Tom E. Curran, NBC Sports boss, and he was on with Dan Patrick today. He said the Patriots are competing with the Buccaneers.
Yeah, first of all, yeah, they're paying attention. They want to do better than what Tom Brady does, regardless. They might love him individually, but I've been told by folks inside that building, we're going to be watching every week, and gosh darn it, we do not want to end up with fewer wins than the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
So the Patriots are apparently battling in their own mind with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Can we, if this is true, can we at least stop the idea that the Patriots are tanking? Can we stop that idea at least? If they're competing with Tampa, they can't be taking.
Man, slow off season apparently, and we know it hasn't been. I mean, that just sounds like complete throw it against the wall stuff, because why would... I don't think the Patriots care about anything except the Patriots.
I think Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick do. I actually
maybe Kraft.
I believe that they don't want to look bad for having let Brady go. So if they see Brady go 12-4 and they go 6-10, everybody's going to say how bad they were in this whole thing.
Yeah,
so
don't you think if the Patriots go 6-10, they're a hell of a lot more concerned that they went 6-10 than whatever Tampa Bay does? I mean, I get the Brady connection, but I just. I think they're so completely laser-focused on themselves all the time.
Yeah, but if the idea is that if Brady was there, they could have been 10-6 or something, or in a playoff team, I think that that does matter to them. It just so it fights off the tanking scenario that people are trying to still convince me of that today. But if this is the case, if they truly wanted to be better than Tampa, and that was one of their goals, then why were they not more aggressive this offseason? This continues to baffle me. What is the plan? Are you rebooting? Are you rebuilding? Are you moving forward trying to win a Super Bowl? Because you didn't draft a quarterback for the future. You waited until the end to sign a quarterback. And now, I don't know. I just don't know. What was the plan here?
Yeah, this is the ultimate in limbo scenario. And it's something this team has been the king of not being in limbo for 20 full years, 20 straight years. There's been no limbo there. They're going to go 10-6, somewhere between 10-6 and 14-2. And in one notable exception, 16-0. They know who their quarterback is. For the most part, they know who everybody is. They know their starters. Everybody comes back. And if they don't, they find somebody quality to stick in there. And it just, this is the first time in so long that I have no idea what this year is. This reminds me a little bit of what the Red Sox are right now.
Like, oh, the Patriots are still better than the Red Sox.
Well, everybody's better than the...
Except for the Mariners.
The Jaguars are better than the Red Sox and the Mariners. But my point being, there's question marks galore going in. And that just the word if has not been a part of the Patriots' repertoire over the last few years verbally.
You know what gets me about the Red Sox real quick? Is that the Red Sox are 1-4 with guys you've never heard of on the mound. The Mariners are 1-4 with top 100 prospects. And they actually had a plan to get to this point. Like, they actually had players that they believe would be really good. They have top 100 prospects. They've been bad for a couple of years now getting to this point. and they're still awful. At least the Red Sox, at least there's nobody you've ever heard of out there. The Mariners have top 100 guys.
Right, but the fact that they still have, these guys are still top 100 guys. You know what? Honestly, I would rather stink with a bunch of 22-year-olds, you know, than I would stink with a bunch of Nick Halls and Isich or Ozich, Matt Hall. I mean, who knows? Nobody. See, I can get away with it now because nobody's ever heard of half their pitching staff.
Oh, my God.
Ozich.
Hey, at least I can't believe what you said in the break.
Yeah.
I'm excited for Eovaldi to pitch.
That's how bad have things gotten in the rotation when you get excited to see Nathan Eovaldi? I assume he's either going to get hurt tonight or he's going to go about 2 1/3.
How bad have things gotten for Robinson Cano apparently in New York that he was hitting like sixth yesterday?
Oh, I didn't even notice.
Because I missed the first inning. I turned it on the second and the Red Sox, or it's like second and third, one out in the second inning. I'm like, for Cano to be up now, he's got to be hitting sixth or seventh in this lineup. Like, that's how bad it's gotten for him. I mean, he's. Robinson Cano is probably a Hall of Famer, and he's hitting like seventh on the New York Mets.
And speaking of future Hall of Famers, you see Mookie Betts, he's 3-for-20 with the Dodgers right now. Obviously, that's not going to last, but I couldn't help but notice and smile a little bit.
There you go. So, hey, when we come back, we'll get you ready for the top four at four. Did you see Patrick Mahomes' new side business, speaking of starting your own business? Did you see what Mahomes is doing? That's next, 101.3 The Game.
This quarantine has taught us all how to be more resourceful. Remember, you can listen to The Huddle on the free 101.3 The Game app, online at 101.3thegame.com, on your smart speaker, and on the good old-fashioned radio. It's The Huddle on 101.3 The Game.
What's up, everybody? Here in the Huddle, 101.3 The Game, 101.3thegame.com. Arnie's still on vacation, but he's back tomorrow. How much do you think he's listened in the time that he's been gone?
He has sort of been mysteriously absent from all things lately, hasn't he? I mean, we saw him a lot with the RV and the brother and all the crazy stories, and he was texting us constantly and just being his usual pain in the butt.
I think he's been listening a lot.
Because he disappeared as of, like, Saturday. I haven't heard from him.
Arnie is addicted to sports talk radio. I really think that Arnie's been listening to us a lot.
I just want to know that he's left his couch.
He's been dealing with Andrew at the Mally Group because I talked to Andrew yesterday. And I know he was out at the house yesterday with the Mally Group people.
Oh, okay.
I already know. I guarantee you can tape this 4:03 today. When Arnie comes back tomorrow, he will use this line. I left and baseball season hadn't started. I'm back and the Red Sox season is over. He will use that line because he texted it to us like last Saturday. He's been sitting on that line. He might even start the show with that tomorrow. I left before baseball season started. I'm back and the season's over.
Even before he says,
Right after that.
Okay.
Right after
that. All right.
And then he'll throw some shade at you because you have vacation next week. So he'll make sure to throw it.
I know. About the endless vacation, blah, blah, blah. That's all I do is take vacation, blah, blah, blah.
I have a question real quick for the text line. I'm supposed to play golf tonight at 6:45. Hopefully the weather holds off.
It might be a little soggy.
But I'm supposed to play with Sean Parker and Tristan in Williston, one of our listeners. I have no idea how I'm going to play. I'm going to play with the new clubs. I went out to the driving range to use them this morning.
That's right.
I couldn't because they were mowing the driving range, and the guy's like, it's going to take us 4 hours to mow the driving range.
But that's a target. That's part of the fun.
Like, put the cage on and let's go here. But instead, no, we couldn't do that. So anyways.
That's odd.
Does anybody, I'm sure, because people love when we talk about golf, somebody give me a good YouTube channel where I can go and get some virtual lessons because I want to fix my slice, learn how to stand. Now that I have clubs that are properly for my height, I want to get good. So somebody tell me a good online resource where I can learn some of the more basic stuff about swing positioning, foot positioning, etc.
Not that I know anything about it, but my first impression is there must be 8 million sites on YouTube on how to swing a golf club correctly.
Yes, but I don't want to waste time looking for all of them. I want one of our listeners, and trust me, our listeners like golf, and they like when we talk about golf, and they like when we talk about me stinking at golf. So one of them has to have an answer as to someone who is reputable that I should spend my time and invest in watching them.
20 years ago, I would have done that, too, to figure out why I slice into the other fairway and almost kill old ladies coming up the other side. But I just don't care anymore.
Well, when's the last time you played golf?
Probably 3 years ago. I mean, my father was obsessed with golf.
Oh, yeah. Didn't he play every day?
Yes, every day. And when he couldn't play anymore, he was a ranger. He moved everyone along at the local golf course.
He was that guy.
At the Queechee Club.
He would not have liked me because I look around to make sure no one's watching and see how many times I can hit my tee shot before someone comes up on me, because I'll end up with like four of them.
Oh man! Well, as a teacher for 37 years and pretty much his whole adult life, and then followed by and also a basketball coach, he likes to boss people around, which is interesting that I would turn out the way I did. I'm pretty much exactly the opposite.
Were you guys loaded growing up or something? Because it costs a lot of money to play golf every day.
No, we joined one of those cheapo clubs around the Boston area, one of those nine-hole places.
Oh, I cannot see you being a country club member.
Oh, no. I went every now and then, but only because they had a pool to jump in on the hot summer days down in Boston.
You being like a club member, I don't see that. Were you wearing like white khakis with a white polo and a little scarf around your neck, or like a sweater?
I guarantee you I was wearing some sort of t-shirt and some sort of untucked shirt over it with a pair of raggy shorts. I'm wearing exactly now what I wore, not literally, but 40 years ago.
Isn't that against club protocol in a lot of places?
So I'll tuck it in.
All right. Now, I told you people like when we talk about golf. There's 109 messages on the text line. Travis in Plattsburgh just watched Caddyshack. Yeah, I'll probably pass on. Well, we watched it. It was great, but...
Charles Barkley's golf school.
Dave in Sheldon says Rick Shields' YouTube channel. Okay. Someone says Dax in Plattsburgh, you're never going to get rid of the slice just by watching videos. Rob in New Haven says, YouTube, me and my golf. I would love if you talk more golf. Watch Colin Morikawa's swing on repeat in slow motion, okay? And me and my golf, or Mark Crossfield on YouTube. Everybody's got a different golf guy on YouTube. Right. So it's going to end up just like you said, where I just go around and search aimlessly and don't know who's right and who's not.
I mean, when you said that, my first thought was there's got to be literally 8 million. You'll probably find out that's quite close to the actual number.
Yeah,
because everybody has a different swing, and everybody says just keep doing it over and over again until you perfect it.
I want somebody reputable.
Well, my problem was my backswing, and that's what was causing me to slice, because I would, just like with baseball, I'd hit everything to right field.
Yeah,
I would sort of a cross swing, and it would just send it way off.
Sometimes to the right, sometimes to the left, sometimes short, sometimes topped, sometimes way too high, rarely perfect. Well, that's what I did.
Well, that's why I stopped using any other clubs other than the 5-iron, including off the tee on a 500-yard par 5. Because I just wanted to hit it straight down the middle. And with a 5-iron, I tended to not slice it.
Well, I am excited to go golfing today. Hopefully, it materializes where I actually can. Also this, Town Fair Tire text line 802-655-6672. Did you see what Patrick Mahomes did yesterday?
Yeah, how about that?
Patrick Mahomes, he of the nearly $500 million contract, just bought an ownership stake in the Kansas City Royals. I can't tell you how cool I think that is.
You know what? You know why it's cool? I think we'll agree. Because it's Kansas City. He's made an investment in a city that he has nothing to do with until he got drafted by the Kansas City Chiefs. I agree with you. I think it's cool. I love the fact that it's the Royals, too, because the Royals stink. And they're just one of those low-budget teams that's never going to be any good.
Well, they just won the World Series a couple years ago.
But they had the perfect storm. Let's face it. They went right back to being the Royals a couple years later.
Yes, they did. So... Town for Tire text line open, 802-655-6672. It reminds me of the Ernie Duncan situation a little bit, where we talk about staying in a place, getting rooted, and buying stock in a city. I think that was awesome for Mahomes.
Look, at both lines are – actually, all the phone lines are ringing right now. This is what happens when you talk about golf, not to change the subject away from the Patrick Mahomes thing. I love the fact that he's buying a team that's perennial at fourth or fifth place in their division and usually has no chance and doesn't spend any money. That's a really cool thing. It reminds me of what KG is doing up in Minnesota. I heard somewhere that he was bidding $500 million, and that was just to own part of the team. Can you imagine how the stakes have gotten so high now that you spent $500 million and you only get a tiny portion of the Minnesota Timberwolves?
It's
unbelievable. So what are all these phone calls? Did you say caller 6 gets $1 million?
No,
a bunch
of people want to talk about golf, and they were just giving me other places on YouTube to go watch. But they didn't need to say it on the air.
You're right, man. You just say the word golf, and... everything goes nuts.
Everyone's telling me Rick Shields golf, so that's good. Now everyone's telling me exactly how to get rid of my slice. I'll have to read that in the break. On Mahomes, I'm going to ask this for the text line. If you could buy one thing, so you get a huge contract, a huge signing bonus, what's the one thing that you want to have? I mean, look, everyone wants a car. Everyone wants a house. It doesn't even have to be expensive. Just like the one thing that you can't buy currently that you would want, Rich.
An RV.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Would you live in the RV?
I guess, if money wasn't an issue, I wouldn't necessarily have to, would I?
No, but do you want the RV just for traveling?
Yes, I would. I don't want an RV for another 5 years or whatever.
Yeah.
Because this radio thing that started at 17, I suppose at some point has to end. But I would like to have an RV. What would you do?
I really want the ultimate man cave, and I want it to be not like in my basement. I want a little shed where people usually put lawnmowers. I want a shed in my backyard that has a bar in it, has a flat screen TV, has insulation, air conditioning, and a mini fridge. That's what, and a recliner.
It's funny. Elaine just bought a shed last week.
Really?
Yes. But it's going to go in her backyard, not anywhere in the house.
No, no, I want the shed in the backyard too. So, I want my man cave to be in the backyard. I want to have a place where I can go outside of the house, watch games, have TV, have a bar, mini fridge, recliners. People come over. I want like a little tiny house in my backyard that is solely dedicated to the man cave.
Ross says Rich wants good credit and to get his Honda Civic back.
That's true.
Steve says winter tires for Rich.
Everyone's ripping you.
Well, of course. Matt says I'd buy a sports radio station and make it a fireable offense to talk about hockey or soccer. Ah. All right, well, he has no chance of working here then.
That's
although
funny.
We never talk about hockey. But that's going to change starting Monday with the playoffs.
Someone said, Rourke says he'd buy his own ski resort. Rob in New Haven wants a membership to Augusta so he can play golf.
Yeah.
Triple E says he wants a giant boat where he can go to the Bahamas. And Chris in Plattsburgh says, oh, this is awesome. He goes, I bought a house with a 4-car garage and turned 2 of the rooms, I think, into his man cave. That's That's excellent. I want the ultimate man cave, and I want it separate from the house.
Well, I'll tell you what, you've got all the ingredients for it right downstairs.
I do.
I mean, that's basically turned into a man cave.
All of that stuff needs to go in my man. Bobbleheads, action figures, flags, posters, that all needs to go.
Yep. I would like to get rid of my slice, Dax in Plattsburgh says.
Yes.
That's answering both of our questions.
I just pay a lot of money to get a good lesson. That's what I would do. So,
Ryan in Essex says, I would buy my own hockey arena. Yeah, I put that up there on my list.
So that you could skate around whenever you want, so that you could make a fortune charging people to skate around.
Right. I have no idea, but just the idea of anything to do with hockey. Maybe I'd buy like an AHL team or something. That'd be fun. So I could be the play-by-play guy. I don't care about the millions I'd have to spend as long as I get the announcing gig.
You just buy. Someone says, I would buy your station just to fire Arnie. Now, that's not nice, Ben. That's not nice.
Ross says, Rich, it's all out of love. Don't tell Brady, but you're my favorite.
Wow.
And all this time, we thought it was you, Brady.
So someone wants to fire Arnie, and someone else says that they don't like me, essentially.
Well, it's Ben up in the islands.
No, but Kyle says he doesn't like me. Ben doesn't like Arnie. Kyle doesn't like me.
Right. Kyle says my own island with a landing strip.
Okay.
How is that offensive to you?
Oh, my God. Okay, Ross says he doesn't like
you.
Ross says he likes you. So, and now that I'm...
Yeah, but maybe you're his second favorite.
Okay.
I mean, maybe you're his favorite ahead of Arnie.
Being in the middle, not too bad. So now let's get to the top four.
The Huddle has 3 hours of show to cover everything. Every day.
Four.
So you don't miss any.
Three.
It's the top four at four.
Two. One.
On 101.3 The Game. Number four.
The Celtics played last night. They got beat by the Rockets 137-112. It was their final tune-up in the Disney bubble. Celtics didn't play any starters, so they basically it was Semi Ojeleye, Brad Wanamaker, Langford, Robert Williams, Carson Edwards. Outside of an awesome dunk by Carson Edwards right on top of James Harden, wasn't a whole lot to watch in that one.
It was really bad, and I was so excited because the Sox game got out of hand with Annie Hall pitching or whatever the guy's name is who started last night, and it was over like it's been every night where, okay, it's 8 o'clock, time to find something else. Thought maybe there'd be a good 8 o'clock flick I could watch. Celtics. I know it doesn't count. There's no fans. I'll watch it anyway. You want to talk about playground basketball with absolutely no defense. I mean, Houston had 70 at the half. I think
77.
70. Sorry, not 70. That's right. They had 70 with about 3 minutes to go in the half. And it was pretty hideous to watch. And granted, it was great to see. But look, it was Harden and it was Westbrook and it was all the Houston starters. One of them got hurt.
Yeah, Eric Gordon.
Eric Gordon,
going to be okay.
Oh, okay, because he was in rough shape. They had pretty much carry him off the court.
Yeah, ankle. He's going to be out a couple of days.
But it was hard to watch because it was just bad hoops.
See, I thought it was fascinating to watch, though. I actually really like what's going on at the Disney bubble. It feels like a mix of summer league and AAU. There's obviously no fans there. It's a smaller court. They've got this video projection screen along the side. And I thought NBC Sports Boston did an unbelievable job of making it feel like it was a Celtics home game that you were watching. They superimposed the Celtics logo on the court.
Okay.
They superimposed their sponsors on the court. You know, they had the Putnam whatever, Putnam Hotel or whatever it was. I don't think that was happening. Now, that game was also on TNT. I'm sure that those images were not on the TNT broadcast.
No, and it was interesting because they had Houston stuff at the other end of the court away from the camera. There was a whole bunch of Rockets Forever or One Team, One Life, whatever, just all these things.
I think the Rockets were the technical home team.
Yes, and the reason you could tell was because the PA announcer was booming over Scal and Gorman.
Yes.
I mean, every time Houston would score, three for Harden, and then Romeo Langford.
I think they're doing the best they can to make them feel like home games for these teams. And they had Rockets fans, and they saw Rockets cheerleaders up on that board back there.
Video.
I thought they did a really good job of making it feel like it was a home game for Houston, but on your TV screen on the NBC Sports Boston broadcast, of making it feel like a Celtic game. I've been very, very pleasantly surprised with the Disney bubble. I had high hopes for it. It's been even better than I thought. Celtics will play for real on Friday.
Right, and it's hard to take anything out of that game when you got Ogilvy and Wanamaker and Langford and Robert Williams, who continues to be interesting to me.
Tantalizingly athletic.
He is, and you see him block three shots on five trips down the floor, and you just think, this guy is so close to being a game changer, but he just hasn't. For one thing, he hasn't been able to stay on the court. He's constantly been hurt. Carson Edwards, you see all these guys that are showing moments of dazzling you, and then they just kind of disappear. But there's nobody playing defense for the Celts last night, and that's what it comes down to. Defense isn't sexy, but it wins you ball games. And none of those guys last night who were trying to make an impression had any interest in impressing with defense.
It's amazing, too, because we all thought that the offense was going to take a little while to come back for these guys. Hey, they haven't been playing as much. They're not going to be able to shoot as well. Boom, here comes everybody all of a sudden shooting the lights out of this thing. We'll see what happens when they do it for real, but I'm excited for it. Celtics Bucks, we get a real big time potential Eastern Conference Finals preview, and we get it on Friday, 6 o'clock over on 960 The Zone. Top 4-4, 101.3 The Game.
Number 3.
Finally, in a world of just awful sports news for the last couple of months, here's some good optimistic news locally. Today, Hockey East announced that they plan on playing a full league season. So this is good for UVM men and women's hockey that can expect, as of now, a full season. What they would do is expand the league season, ditch either most or all of the non-conference games, and try to get as close to many games as they usually do. Could be 24, could be 30 Hockey East games. But bottom line, a pretty darn full game load for UVM right now is the expectation.
Yeah, I'll tell you, that team could play the Sisters of Mercy right now, and I'd be thrilled with it. Just anything. And I mean, I was saying that about baseball, and now we finally got our wish. This is great. I mean, Hockey East is where it's at. See, Boston. The question is, are there going to be fans at Gutterson? Or how are? I wonder.
I would say no right now. I would say no.
I agree with you. I don't think there's any way you can do that.
So the question, Rich, and I ask you this, is the UVM hockey fan and also kind of the local historian when it comes to sports on this. Outside of just stunting for our sister station, 620, which does the UVM games, if there's no fans, I'm sure there will be people that listen on our sister station.
Oh, yeah.
But if there's no fans and these games are not readily on television, what's the interest level in UVM hockey?
I think, thanks to the new coach, the interest is going to be very high. I completely am. But it's funny because he wasn't really on our list of the final three. I mean, we just had this hypothetical list we had. And I remember some people, including us for the most part on the show, were a little bit let down by the hire. It didn't seem like a sexy hire at all.
That's our new friend, Todd Woodcroft.
But man, Woodcroft has come in here, and I mean, look, stats are stats, especially in high school and in the minors and so forth. But he has brought 10 kids in here, and some of them have some pretty eye-opening statistics. And I love the fact that this team is getting very, very international.
See, I think that without the games being readily on TV, And if you're not able to go in person, I just don't think that the interest level is going to be as high as you think it is. I do think there's optimism around the program. I do think that diehards are going to always be diehards, but they're going to be even more tuned in. Todd Woodcroft has done a good job with his recruits. He's going to join us tomorrow at 325.
Nice.
I'm curious as to how many of these recruits were guys that he implicitly or explicitly brought in on his own and how many were already in the bag from Kevin Snedden's recruiting tenure. I'm curious about that, but there are some good names in there. The Tinling brothers are the guys that seem to be getting the most pub, these kids out of Quebec. One of them is only going to be 17 years old. He's going to be one of the youngest right. players in all of Division One.
So they're not twins. I was kind of hoping they'd be twins. That would have a great – the Tinling twins.
They're not. I want to say that the younger one is Azaro Tinling. Don't okay. quote me on that. It's Dovar and Azaro, and one of them reclassified to get into this class to be able to join UVM. So Todd Woodcroft is going to be with us tomorrow at 325.
Yeah, five Canadians. Half that class is Canadians. What did we say about 6 months ago when they were 2-19 or whatever they were and nobody was scoring goals? You're an hour and a half from the Canadian border here at the most. Well, not that. You're 45 minutes from yeah. the Canadian border here. You're an hour and a half from Montreal. Why can't we get any Canadian kids? And boom, we got five of them in the new class.
And one Swede, which is where Todd Woodcroft has roots in Sweden, because I think he coached for the Swedish national team at one point. And then one Latvian as well. So a lot of international players coming to Burlington. We do like that. Top 4 at 4, 101.3 the game.
Number 2.
Red Sox lost again last night. Surprise, surprise. What? Just a horrid baseball all of a sudden. Are people checked out on the Red Sox? They're 1-4. Are you done with them for now?
No, but I'll tell you, when the Bruins get back to action, I'm not even going to know who the Red Sox are. I can't wait for the Bruins. They start this Sunday on this radio station against Philadelphia to determine the 1-4 seeds, and I can't wait. And it does look all systems go for yeah. the NHL more
no
than
positive,
just about anything else.
No positive tests, NHL, right. no positive tests. All the bubbles are working.
Right. Well, I'm hanging in with the Red Sox for a little while. The problem right now, Brady, to me, is that they're just the games are over by 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah,
know, these are not 3-2 finals. These are not 5-4 thrillers with a walk off home run.
No, there's things just not even keeping your interest right now. Well, Xander Bogaerts was wrong to call it the pitching staff. He's right in that when you're down 6-0, 5-1 in the blink of an eye,
yes.
that is a problem, and it's hard in a fanless environment to manufacture energy in terms of coming back. So. The Red Sox are a tough watch right now. 1-4. Eovaldi pitches tonight. That will make them more watchable, but they're playing DeGrom, so I don't know that they're going to hit tonight.
Eovaldi gives it. Well, that's the thing. It's funny. There's a lot of guys who are hitting. Everybody, this is all or nothing right now. You know who's hitting? It's Pilar. It's a nice little pickup. But there's nothing exciting about this team right now. It's funny because I was so excited when the season started. They got 13 runs in that first game. Granted, it was against an awful Baltimore pitching staff. But the fact that there's no fans at Fenway, to me, as a viewer and a listener, it's mattering to me. And the fact that they're 1-4 is obviously in the background, and that's not helping the situation as far as fan interest. But it's just not the same. They're trying to manufacture something, and for me, it's not working.
Man, I haven't been bothered by it. It really hasn't bothered me at all. What bothers me is that if the team notices it and they are playing listless baseball, then I guess it would bother me. But from my own viewing experience, the piped-in crowd noise is fine. I am just happy to have baseball yeah. back.
Well, that's why I feel kind of bad about it, because I was saying all through February, March, April, it's like, I just want baseball. I just want baseball. Now that it's back, not having the crowd, especially when your first five games are at Fenway, you know, that sort of buzz at the beginning of the season throughout Fenway, especially for the home opener. Obviously, just not there.
First road trip tonight. They're only going to New York, in quotes, taking on the Mets. So we'll have it for you. Coverage is at 6:10. But Red Sox are 1-4, trying to avoid 1-5. And my dad is a White Sox fan. They're 1-4. He already texted me last night. I buried him for the season.
Wow.
So he's done with the White Sox at 1-4. My team's 1-4. Your team's 1-4. My dad seems 1-4. Cumulatively, 3-12.
On to the Blackhawks for him.
No, he's hockey for my dad. Come on. Next.
I don't know.
Number one.
Patriots safety Patrick Chung, he spoke to CBS this morning about his decision to opt out of the NFL season and Bill Belichick's reaction to that decision.
That's private, but he understood. I would say he understood. He understands there, you know, it's a serious pandemic, you know, going on, and then, you know, he totally got it. You know, Bill, you guys think Bill is like this drill sergeant, but he's actually a very caring person. You know, so he totally understood, and you know, that was it. It was a short phone call.
So it's a short phone call. He says Bill Belichick, not what we perceive him to be. He said he's a very caring person. Rich, did that make you happy to hear that Belichick is more understanding than we think?
Well, my first impression has always been cynicism when it comes to that. And I just say, well, that's of course what he's going to say on television. I suspect that Belichick was disappointed for sure. But I think he probably played that role of being the caring guy. I mean, Chung has a pregnant girlfriend, a baby girl coming. His son has asthma. His dad is 75 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, there was just a lot of reasons. He didn't really need to sell it once I heard that. But as to whether Belichick is happy or not, I mean, he obviously is not going to be happy. But
Happy is different. Understanding
right.
is more likely. I think Belichick absolutely is understanding. And I have thought that if you are in the club of Belichick, and I think Brady was there for a while. I think Edelman's there. I think Chung is there. McCourty's are there. Slater is there. If you are a long-tenured Patriot, I have a feeling that Bill Belichick is extremely caring about you. He does consider those guys like family. I really do believe that. If you're a fringe roster guy, a guy who hasn't been there very long, I could see him not caring as much about you. But for Patrick Chung, I can completely understand why he sees Belichick that way. Because I think Belichick does view Chung differently. That's 10 years he's been the coach. That's got to matter for Chung.
And having 24 hours of hindsight after the mass exodus for the Patriots yesterday, the thing you brought up that I hadn't really even thought about, but it should have been there. It's right there in front of you the whole time. The fact that they all of them, including the guys you barely heard of, have rings.
Except, well, not
so
all of them. Vitaly doesn't.
Joe Vitale doesn't have a ring?
Danny Vitale.
I think he's an actor.
Danny Vitale.
I'm just not going to use anybody's first name anymore. I'm done. What's your name again?
Yeah, Bolden had a ring.
Right, well, Bolden has at least one.
Yeah. Bolden does. Hightower does.
He's got three.
Yeah, Chung does.
I think three.
I think 11 rings were right. opted out of the season.
Right.
So they already got paid, and they already have
right.
the rings.
And that was my point, is I think these guys, I think that changes the equation considerably. I mean, what do they have to come back for right now? They've completely accomplished everything you could possibly want to accomplish in this sport. And I think they're, for the most part, all going to come back. But that stuff matters. And yesterday when you mentioned it, I just kind of poo-pooed it. But I think it matters a lot.
I do think the decision must have been incredibly hard. I mean, Patrick Chung's at the end of his career. He knows that. He told CBS this morning that he knows he's at the end of his career. He's taking a massive risk here that maybe his spot is not waiting for him. And so I applaud these guys. I think it takes a lot of courage to opt out and do what they're doing because their professional livelihood is on the line, big money is on the line, and their job security is on the line. So, and Nate Solder also opted out, not a Patriot anymore, but a former Patriot, plays with the Giants. That was breaking news about an hour ago. He also is out of the NFL season. Rich, 24 hours ago, people thought this was orchestrated by Bill Belichick. Today, 24 hours later, finally, the smart people are talking. They aren't buying it. That's next. 101.3 The Game.
Join the conversation now and be part of the show.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for taking the call.
At 802-655-6672.
Right.
It's The Huddle with Arnie, Rich, and Brady on 101.3 The Game.
Welcome back. You're in the huddle. 101.3 The Game, 101.3thegame.com. We'll get to the Patriots in a second here. We are working to confirm some potentially big news regarding UVM hockey. I don't want to say what it is yet, but we were tipped off to something, and I'm working to confirm it right now. And if we can, we'll tell it to you. But when we talk to Todd Woodcroft tomorrow, new UVM hockey coach, we might have something else big to ask him when he joins us at 325.
Yeah. It's easy to.
I don't want to be that guy who just like leads you on something.
No, but this is like Ric Flair.
I don't want to say.
Should we go in that direction?
No, I don't want to say it until I get any kind of confirmation.
Right.
I got one text out on it now. So
yeah. And I just heard from a reputable source about it, and so I looked it up on Twitter, and There it is, but okay. There's absolutely no sources right now confirming it, so we don't want to blurt it out yet.
All right.
So why did you bring it up, just out of curiosity?
Because now I got it. Now I've got it confirmed.
Okay, well, go ahead.
So listen, look, we might have to put the Patriots on hold for this. This is good local news, yep. Big local news, actually. So
we got this, by the way, from George Como, the longtime voice of
yes, UVM I was going to get there. I wasn't going to not give George's
okay,
credit.
Okay, because George is my pal, so yes, we want to make sure. We wouldn't have known this right away, like, if he hadn't told us.
Nick Kyprios, who is a former NHL player, right?
Yes, he is.
Okay. He reports that former Toronto Maple Leafs head coach Mike Babcock, who was just fired this season by the Maple Leafs.
But he's one of the big-time coaches.
Former Red Wings coach, too, right?
Oh, absolutely. He's big-time.
He's the highest-paid coach in NHL history.
Yes, he is.
He is joining the UVM men's hockey staff as a volunteer assistant. Now, I got confirmation on that from a source, but I hear, my experience is that when NHL veterans take those positions, it's usually to provide some consultation, maybe make one or two appearances in the course of the season. I wouldn't expect him to move to Burlington. But nonetheless, in the age of Zoom calls and the age of digital talking, the idea that you have the highest paid and one of the winningest coaches in NHL history listed on your website as a staff, that's good for recruiting. That's good for conversation. And that's good for Todd Woodcroft to be privy to Mike Babcock. This is nothing but good news for UVM.
Right. We just got through talking about all these kids that are coming to UVM with big time stats for a team that's been starving for scoring for the last several years. And, you know, that was exciting in its own right. But if you're bringing Mike Babcock in, you talk about an absolute coup for recruiting.
I mean, a volunteer assistant, again, my source says don't expect him to move to Burlington. But the idea that if he's just there to be somebody that Todd Woodcroft can talk to, and if he's just there to be listed on the website and a recruit can see that, wow, Mike Babcock, one of the most accomplished coaches in NHL history, he's just a part of this thing.
Right.
I mean, come on, that right there, that's huge news in recruiting.
Right, and Kyprios reports Babcock is not expected to be behind the UVM bench at any time. One of the reasons he's a volunteer at this point is because the Maple Leafs have to pay him that fat contract for a while.
Shane says, this is enormous, but I'm confused. Why is he doing somebody a solid? Well, Kyprios report. So Woodcroft and Babcock have a connection, right?
They do. They both were, the head coach, Todd Woodcroft of UVM, this is a reuniting with Babcock and him. They both won the gold medal together in the 2004 World Championships.
But that's 16 years ago.
Yeah.
So clearly there's a relationship that has been cultivated there. And, and Woodcroft has been at the NHL level. So he's certainly been around Babcock, even though he was in Winnipeg and Babcock was in Toronto the last couple of years. So, I mean, they've clearly run in the same circle, but that's 16 years worth of I mean, Babcock has got to be a mentor to Woodcroft in some way.
And the point you brought up is important to emphasize here is this is not a guy who's – Mike Babcock is not going to be standing behind the bench. And he's not probably – I'm just speculating here. He's not going to be in people's living rooms, although maybe he will be. Who knows? But the thing is if you can get him on that staff officially, which it appears they can – that's a huge tool.
I think you're looking at it that I don't see Mike Babcock coming. God, I'm gonna have to be able to say his name right first and foremost. Mike Babcock,
Woodcroft and Babcock.
I know. I'm trying to get it down here. He's not going to be in people's living rooms. He's not going to be on the ice in Burlington. He might come in here, like my source said, 1 to 2 times a year. But I think this is mostly look. We have all become more resourceful in various ways throughout the pandemic. The idea that you can just fire up Mike Babcock on a Zoom call to talk with a player, to talk with a recruit, to talk to yourself and ask questions to. I mean, look, hey, my goalie's struggling. Well, we got a goalie coach. We also got Mike Babcock. Let's go talk to him. Hey, my defensemen are struggling. What am I going to do in the power play? Oh, let's just call up Mike Babcock and he can draw us some diagrams. I think that alone is huge. And for players that do want to get to the NHL, to have proximity to Babcock in any way, I mean, that is a big deal.
It adds a layer, no question about it, as far as attraction to coming to Burlington to play hockey. And then the fact is Woodcroft, as soon as he got hired, what did he say? He did a little video chat with
NBC 5.
From NBC 5. He says, my job is to come to UVM and send these kids to the next level, whatever that may be. And I'm sure for most of these kids, especially the real good ones, that you want to get into Gutterson Fieldhouse on a constant basis, that means the NHL. And if you've got Mike Babcock there, I mean, what better liaison is there from going from one place to the NHL the fastest than him?
Shane is the only text message we've got on this. I'm curious if people care, because you and I care about this.
Well, Shane, this isn't some, 23-year-old hotshot coach in his first year in the NHL. This is one of the big timers over the last 20 years.
I mean, when we talk about how can UVM rebuild itself and how can UVM get to the middle of the pack in Hockey East, and they don't have the biggest budget, well, you've got Mike Babcock there as an unpaid volunteer assistant who, just if he has a cup of coffee with your organization this year, you got to be happy with it. You want to take yourself to the next level on a budget, well, right. Having this guy as an unpaid volunteer assistant can only be good. There is no bad that can come from this.
Right. Some 17-year-old hotshot with 53 goals who plays in Montreal has a chance to play an hour and a half south. Here's that he can get some advice from Mike Babcock. Hello.
And Mike Babcock's contacts for if these guys do want to go to the NHL. I mean, you think about the network now that Todd Woodcroft has. A lot of them are clearly UVM legends, Martin St. Louis, Patrick Sharp, Aaron Miller, Torrey Mitchell, all of these guys that are already part of the Kevin Miller, part of the UVM family at the NHL level. Well, now Woodcroft's got NHL roots. Babcock clearly has NHL roots. You are starting to build now a really robust network for these guys, and that is massively appealing. And I can't wait to talk to Woodcroft tomorrow when we have him on the show at 325.
Right, and I mean, most of the people at Crawdaddy saying Babcock doing UVM a huge solid. He's a game changer. Ty in Canada, who would certainly know, he said some not so complimentary things about him. But the fact is the recruits don't know a lot of stuff. They don't care about baggage. They don't care about ego, things like that. They care about Mike Babcock as a guy who could potentially get him to the next, or that kid to the next level.
You know, see, a lot of people are saying the same thing, and people who know more about hockey than I do, Ty, Travis, some others, Babcock comes with a lot of baggage. He's rubbed people the wrong way in his life or in his career. I believe that, and that's fine, but he's not going to be on the bench. He's here to probably rebuild his own image in some way. So he's certainly going to play the part and play it nicely. That's good. He's going to be he's going to be on his best behavior here. Mm-hmm. He's not going to be on the bench to grade at people every day. If he's there to just look good on your website, provide some consultation and be a mouthpiece for Todd Woodcroft. And clearly there's a relationship here with Woodcroft that goes back at least, as we said, 16 years. So clearly Woodcroft doesn't feel graded by Babcock, so that's got to be a good thing.
Yeah, and among all the comments about it's going to be interesting to see him here, I don't think here is where he's going to be. But, he may put in an appearance. Who knows? But Roark says, does his son still play for Merrimack, though?
I don't know. I know Bob Emery coaches at Merrimack.
I'll have to check that out. And the next one says, doesn't Babcock's kid play for a UVM rival? I guess that would be Merrimack. I'll go look at their roster when I get a second here. Alex in Swanton says, I'm just glad that UVM's making moves for the hockey team. They've been bad for a while. Now this might bring in some good recruits. That's exactly what I'm saying. You know, everybody's saying ego and baggage and just got fired and all this stuff. He's coming in and getting paid nothing to have his name on the UVM coaching roster, basically.
Babcock's kid graduated from Merrimack, so he is done. Okay. So there's no conflict there in terms of the conference. But you just want people around your program that are accessible, are reputable, and can help your program grow by word of mouth, financially in terms of donations, etc., and can help you in recruiting and can help at the next level. All of these things are appealing. I'll be interested to talk to Woodcroft tomorrow and ask him not only about Babcock, about the recruits, but how much has he done with the NHL alumni that UVM has? Because I think that's the critical part of this, is getting a connectivity between the alumni base and between your current student athletes and your prospective student athletes. I want to hear that, yes, Martin St. Louis is on board. We talk. I want to hear that Aaron Miller can call up a recruit and talk about how great UVM is. I want to hear that Torrey Mitchell and Aaron Miller live in town, and when we bring in a recruit, we'll take them to Buffalo Wild Wings to hang out with these guys and meet them and let them bounce questions. Those are things I want to hear. I want that connection between people in power in hockey and the current players.
And Pat in Elizabethtown brings up a good point. Most successful people have rubbed others the wrong way. That's true. But George in Fairfax, it'll be better recruiting from Canada. That's That's what we were just saying. I mean, this is interesting. This has come along in the 4 o'clock hour because we started the hour basically talking about UVM hockey and Woodcroft and things like that, and how they just how exciting it is that they've got five kids, including a couple of them, the Tinling kids,
yeah,
from Canada and from some from the Montreal area. I mean, we haven't had a lot of Montreal recruits since some kid named St. Louis and Eric Perrin joined him a few years ago, and we know how that worked out. So, you know, that's fertile territory up there, more fertile territory than just about anywhere in North America. And you've got it an hour and a half away, and I'm glad to see them diving in.
Unnamed texter says a Stanley Cup and a gold medal is a huge bonus for UVM. Someone says, has any alumni for UVM been coached by Babcock? I can't answer that off the top of my head. I mean, I'm...
Toronto and Detroit. Trying to think.
I mean, I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I can't think of one right now, but again, don't hold me to that off the top of my head.
He's the Swedish kid. He played for the Maple Leafs for a while.
Well, they had Victor Stahlberg.
Stahlberg, that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah.
I don't think Stahlberg was there recently enough to have been with Babcock. Okay. I don't know why I think that, but I'm not sure. That I don't know. But this can only be good news for UVM and UVM hockey, for prospective athletes. And if I'm a current athlete at UVM, look, I want access to Mike Babcock. I don't know how often I want access, but I like knowing that Mike Babcock is there to
right.
talk to.
And here you go. This is a chip, too, for recruiting. All right, I can't decide. I'm going to do – how many years in a row has it been? BC, BU, same old teams. You know, Minnesota, Michigan, all these powerhouses year after year after year. And Vermont's never been in that. What if the kid's thinking between BC and BU and Vermont? Oh, by the way, we'd like to have you just have a five-minute conversation with this guy. It's Mike Babcock. What do you think?
And Ty says, the one thing nobody can deny that Mike Babcock is that he will never be out-prepared or outworked when it comes to breaking down video. So maybe Todd Woodcroft shoots some video over to him and says, hey, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? And he doesn't have to invest a day in it. Invest an hour in it.
And that's what Todd Woodcroft did.
Yes.
As a job for the Winnipeg Jets of the NHL.
Brian in Burlington, I've never followed hockey that much, but if this is as good as it sounds, UVM may have picked up a new fan.
There you go.
And that, with as bad as UVM has been lately, the idea that somebody who has never cared but now might care, that right there is a win. It's a win at the most basic level, but that is a win for the program. So good on the Catamounts for this. Todd Woodcroft tomorrow with us at 3:25. So we never ended up getting to the Tom Brady thing or to the Patriot thing. I want to get to that, but a conspiracy theory involving the Red Sox on our Facebook page. This one... I don't think I buy this one. That's next, 101.3 The Game.
Brady.
Yeah. I remember because Arnie tells us every week, once a week. You said one earlier that I heard for the 94th time.
Rich.
For the time he almost became part of the Bus family. Please tell us that one for the 74th time.
Arnie.
You know, we should have a segment like Arnie retells a story.
It's The Huddle on 101.3 The Game.
Welcome back here in the huddle, 101.3 The Game, 101.3thegame.com. Yep, big news, Mike Babcock joining the staff of Todd Woodcroft at UVM. We will talk to Coach Woodcroft tomorrow at 3:25. Buster Olney is going to join us about 10 minutes from now, and I got to ask him about this one. Did you see what one of our listeners posted on our Facebook page?
Yeah, we got a lot of response, and some of it was a little out there.
So yesterday we asked the question, was it inappropriate for Xander Bogaerts of the Red Sox to speak negatively of the pitching staff? And we both agreed that it was.
Absolutely.
Someone says, Xander Bogaerts is doing this so that he can get traded from this dumpster fire. Do you think Xander Bogaerts is trying to get traded from the Red Sox? Because, I've heard some ludicrous things. Yeah. This one is up there, though.
That guy, that's a Boston fan, if I ever heard one. Massive overreaction. They're 1-4, and I understand they may finish 20-40 this year. And it may be a disaster, but Xander Bogaerts, of all people, isn't going anywhere.
I mean, Xander Bogaerts signed a 7-year deal last year, which I believe was a 6-year extension.
Yes, a very team-friendly one, I might add.
And he wants to be in Boston. He likes the idea of being here. This is a team that drafted him, developed him, developed him as like family to him. Yes, I think he's frustrated by what's happening right now. We're all frustrated right now by what's happening in the world when it comes to the coronavirus. I think it's far more likely that this team tries to trade J.D. Martinez than ever tries to think about trading Xander Bogaerts. That's the one that I'd be worried about is the idea of Martinez being traded, not Bogaerts wanting out of town.
Oh, my gosh. The only thing I can think of from the Red Sox standpoint is you could get the moon in a trade for him.
for Bogarts.
Oh, absolutely. With that friendly, and I hesitate to use that term, what is it, $120 million? Yeah. That's a pretty friendly contract. They called that a hometown discount when it happened, and a lot of people were kind of unhappy, the players were, that he signed that deal. You could get anything for him, basically, but there's no way that you can look at it that way.
You don't trade players who have 6 years left of team control or five additional ones beyond this year. You don't trade players like that. Bogarts wants to be the face of the Red Sox. He's frustrated right now. He shouldn't have said what he said. Hopefully he learns from it. So it was a mistake that he did that. Hopefully he recognizes that. Hopefully he apologizes to his teammates, but Xander Bogaerts isn't going anywhere, and Xander Bogaerts doesn't want to go anywhere. WEEI said, along with Tatum, he might be the face of Boston sports now, given Chara's age and given Brady being gone and Edelman's age. It might be him and Tatum.
Right, and the thing is, too, when you're in Boston for the Red Sox, I mean, and this was proven so much under John Farrell and even Bobby Valentine for that one awful season.
Friend of the show, Bobby V.
Yes, exactly. That's right, once.
We had him on once, yes.
That's right, I forgot.
I love Bobby V.
The fact is the team's not going to be down. It's not going to stink for very long with the Red Sox. The front office is just not going to allow that to happen. They've got money to spend. They're clearly stepping back this year. This is going to be probably a pretty bad bridge year. When you think about bridge years, when you have tons of money to spend, you think of 500 seasons. I'm not sure that's going to be what this case is. But Bogaerts he's fine. He's going to be fine. He just misspoke yesterday, and I think he's frustrated. He's also not in the lineup tonight because he's banged up.
Well, they'll reset the competitive balance tax this year. Next year, we think free agency outside of Mookie is going to be pretty light in terms of what players get. So the Red Sox might even be able to get some bargains in the offseason on some pretty good players. I don't think that they will be down forever. I don't think they'll be down for an incredibly long period of time. But this year, they are down. Bogaerts misspoke yesterday. He's not trying to get traded. He loves the Red Sox. He loves the family dynamic. And, hey, by the way, a little breaking news. Damian Williams, running back for the Chiefs, he is opting out of the 2020 season. Damian Williams rushed for over 100 yards in the Super Bowl.
Wow.
Now, they have Clyde Edwards-Helaire there, who they drafted in the first round out of LSU, who everyone expects to be great. But Damian Williams rushed for 100-plus yards for the Super Bowl champions in the Super Bowl last year. That is a loss for the defending Super Bowl champs. So, again, we reserve judgment on what happens to the Patriots. Every team is going to be impacted in some way or another. When we come back, Buster Olney of ESPN kicks off Hour 3 with us on the Huddle, 101.3 The Game.
From the betting cage to the clubhouse, he's got all the answers you need. It's time for our weekly talk with Randolph Center, Vermont native son, and ESPN baseball insider Buster Olney, 101.3, The Game.
Welcome back here in the Huddle, 101.3 The Game, 101.3thegame.com. Arnie on vacation. Final day for him, our final hour without Arnie. Rich, glad you were able to get Buster on the phone there. So
that's the second week in a row. It was a little complicated and overwhelming for me.
You weren't looking at it, but it's okay. It's kind of...
I didn't realize he was going to call back literally the instant I called him.
Well, that's how Buster is. So Buster Olney, TikTok Jewelers guest line. Buster, how are you?
My head's spinning. You know,
I'll bet.
The news. It feels like every 2 seconds there's something else. This guy's in, this guy's out, that team's down, that team can't play, the schedule's changed, it's 2020.
Well, we're seeing a lot of NFL players opt out here with a couple of days left to go in their deadline, including some pretty prominent names. I guess we'll start with the Marlins. What are you hearing? I don't even know. What are your thoughts on the Marlins? I guess I'll just start broadly.
And real quick, I just got news, just dropped into my box, that Joe Kelly and Dave Roberts have been suspended by Major League Baseball for that incident in Houston last night.
Wow, we'll get to that in a minute then.
Well, here's the thing. I think generally speaking, and I've talked to you guys about this the last couple of weeks, that people around baseball have confidence about what's going on with the protocol and the health and safety, and they feel like the players are taking it seriously. There's a lot of conversation around baseball that the Marlins didn't do that. And I think that, you know, I remember when we started on the summer camp, I had a baseball executive say to me that, yeah, we feel like we're doing it, but remember, we're only as strong as our weakest link. And in this case, you know, the fact that the Marlins are a young team with a lot of guys who, you know, don't have experience, and not necessarily a team loaded with veteran guys, it's you know, it probably isn't a surprise that they're one of the teams that at this point looks like an outlier. Joe Kelly got 8 games.
Wow.
Yeah. In his suspension. Dave Roberts got 1 game.
Did you think, by the way, first off, did you think it was intentional? I thought he threw at Bregman. I didn't think the Correa thing was intentional because it was a slider.
I thought they were both intentional.
Wow.
I think that he was spraying the ball around for, you know, the first couple of batters, and he was struggling, as he always does, with fastball command. And it's almost like when he got to 3-0 that the light switch went on.
Yes.
And he's like, you know what, I'm just going to throw it. And I know a lot of times people go, well, it was a breaking ball. He didn't throw it on purpose. I'm not buying that. I don't think Carlos Correa was either on the one that got near him. Very interesting, though, that, you know, at the field level with the umpires, you know, Joe Kelly wasn't thrown out. There wasn't any warning given right after the thing happened with Bregman. True. And Major League Baseball coming down with a hammer.
Yep.
Dave Roberts told reporters this afternoon that, you know, in his conversation with Major League Baseball, they were really unhappy with how this was handled. Also, Dusty Baker got a fine, the manager of the Astros.
Buster, how many of those 8 games is because he threw at Astros?
Well, I thought this was ridiculous in the wintertime, but when Rob Manfred made it clear that, you know, that they weren't going to foster a free and open season on the Astros, I know I heard from people of other teams saying that they just didn't think that was fair, that there would be special dispensation made for the Astros in a way that you don't see with other teams. Because once that's out there, look, we're going to come down hard in anybody who throws at the Astros. I mean, it, you know, theoretically changes the competitive dynamic with the Astros hitters in the box. As they move forward, they feel like, you know, the commissioner's got our back here. The commissioner's office is going to protect us. I can't remember a situation in which we've seen that. And I, you know, I can understand why people of other teams are probably going to be unhappy about this.
Buster, I know you're against throwing at people in general. You've called a baseball a weapon. You don't like that. But was this even Joe Kelly's score to settle? He wasn't even on that Dodgers team, and he got a ring the year later.
No, it wasn't, and you're right. And the Red Sox, another team that was technically found to have cheated, he was actually on their team in 2018 when they beat the Dodgers. And now he's on the Dodgers, and he's settling scores for them. It was very interesting how that played out last night. You know, I was saying I did some TV today that I think when we get these beanball situations, it really just comes down to the personality of the guy on the mound holding the ball. I've told you guys stories in the past about how when I covered Andy Pettitte, he couldn't stand the retaliation stuff. Like, he wanted nothing to do with it, to the point that at times he annoyed his teammates. And on the other hand, we've seen with Joe Kelly, he's on the opposite end of the spectrum. He's got no problem with it. I also think he really doesn't mind if folks in the other dugout think he's a little crazy. And, you know, he's a well-liked teammate among, you know, the guys that he plays with. And as they say, I just kind of wonder if once he went to 3-0, that his feeling was, well, I'm probably going to walk him anyway, so I might as well make the best of this. And the Dodger players had made it clear during the wintertime after the Astros scandal had broke that that they, you know, at some point they were upset with it. I think it was Ross Stripling who basically indicated that, yeah, I would vote yes in terms of retaliation coming down the road.
Boy, message sent loud and clear. It doesn't surprise me, though, I got to say. Back to the Marlins situation. I mean, if you have teams playing 8 or 9 or 10 less games in a 60-game season, are we just assuming you're going to have to go percentage-wise, winning percentage for playoff seedings?
Yeah, 100%. I did SportsCenter last night, and Kevin Negandhi, who was the host, asked me, you know, what about fair and balanced schedule? And I'm like, forget it.
Yeah.
That's like an something that's just not going to be in play this year. You know, it starts with the 60-game schedule and the fact that these teams are playing, you know, different groups of teams. The schedule, if you're one of the American League or National League Central teams, is different, less difficult, in theory, than if you're an American League East or National League East schedule. And so, you know, I do think you're probably at the end of the year, as we did in 1981, going to wind up a lot of teams having played a different number of games. You know, I heard Matt Klentak, the general manager of the Phillies, said today, basically say, that's where we are right now. You know, the priority absolutely should be, and it feels like it is, in the Marlins' case, to clean it up and, you know, to deal with that. And I think that's become the priority. The interesting thing for me is in the last 48 hours, it really does feel like that the players are beginning to flex their muscles a little bit and understanding how much leverage they actually have in this situation. You know, I think a lot of questions around baseball about why in the world did Major League Baseball allow the Phillies and the Marlins to play on Sunday, given that the Marlins had already had four players test positive on their way to, what, the numbers up to 18. And so it was interesting how the next day the Washington Nationals players were taking a vote and saying, we're not going to go to Miami. We don't want to do that this weekend. You had, you know, the Chicago Cubs, Cincinnati Reds talking to each other about how do you feel about playing today. The bottom line is, if we get into a situation where a team group of players doesn't want to play, Rob Manfred can't make them play. Like, he can't. He's not going to do it. And the idea that, especially in this crazy season, that he would, you know, his ultimate hammer in most years would be, well, then you'll have to forfeit. In this year, it's not going to carry the same weight. And it also, Rob would certainly get a lot of criticism for forcing a team on the field when the players weren't comfortable.
Buster Olney, ESPN MLB Insider, with us here on the Huddle, 101.3 The Game, 101.3thegame.com. So the results look good so far for the Phillies as far as all the tests have come up negative. But are people around baseball still worried because of the incubation period of the virus?
Not in regards to the Phillies. You know, there's a general feeling that stuff that happens outside in non-crowded situations, even though, you know, the players were within proximity of each other, I think there's more comfort level once the players are outside, and that seems to be where most of the contact was between the Marlins and the Phillies. As I say, it's been interesting because at the beginning of this, there was so much fear. And with some teams like the Nationals, Dave Martinez using the word scared earlier in the week, there's fear. But the attitude around baseball is, to put it bluntly, that the Marlins screwed up. And the Marlins right now are the outlier, and that most teams, you know, their groups of players and their families are working really hard to make it happen.
Buster, what about the Yankees and all this? How must they be feeling? I mean, they haven't played in a few days. They barely got their season started. They had the weekend, and that's been it. They're changing their travel schedule. I mean, how tough is that for them right now?
You know, it is certainly far less than ideal. You know, yesterday they were scheduled to go back to New York at 1 o'clock, and at 12:15 they got word that their games were canceled. Major League Baseball offered them a chance and said, look, if you want, and they were in Philadelphia, they were offered the chance to play a couple games at Baltimore.
Yep.
And the Yankee players, Zach Britton apparently has done an unbelievable job for the Yankees in terms of being a leader. You know, he's the player rep. He's a respected veteran. He's got a lot of experience. And so calls are going from Aaron Boone and Brian Cashman to Zach Britton. You know, what do you think? We go play in Baltimore, and they're like, yeah, we're in Philadelphia. We're right down the road. It makes a lot more sense to go play two games against the Orioles. Let's go. And I really, you know, that one of the challenges of this thing, and maybe a separator in the standings, is which teams can make, you know, lemonade out of lemons. And it absolutely feels like the Yankees are one of those teams where, you know, everything you see said, every response to every challenge, you know, in this unusual year, it's, hey, we got this. We're ready to go. And on the flip side, boy, you just see the reticence of the Washington Nationals, you know, and a lot of spoken concerns. And, boy, this, you know, I think Dave Martinez said yesterday, you hope somebody does the right thing. I don't know exactly what he meant. It sounded like he was suggesting, you know, shut it down. But I know the Yankees are on the other side, and you know, they go to Baltimore. They're scheduled to play tonight, scheduled to play the next day, and I think their attitude is, whatever's coming our way for 66 days, we're going to do the best we can.
Buster, a team that's just lemons rather than making lemonade are the Red Sox. What do people say about them around baseball right now?
That they're shocked at how bad they are, and you know what's happened to them so quickly. You know, it's amazing because, you know, as they ramped up under Dave Dombrowski, and they spent the prospect resources to go get Chris Sale and to get Craig Kimbrel. You know, the goal internally in the organization was to win the World Series, and they did that. And now, boy, it just feels like there's such an enormous cost, especially among the pitching. You know, I spent some time talking to an evaluator today and asked him the question, you know, how long will it take the Red Sox to put together a pitching staff that could contend in the American League East? And there was a lot of silence.
Wow.
Like, yeah, it could be a while. When you look at the names they have, you know, Chris Sale, you know, had Tommy John surgery this year. He's obviously out all of this year. Their hope is they get him back sometime next year. Realistically, he's not going to be as big of a factor probably next year as they would love. Eduardo Rodriguez, his situation with you know, his heart condition, who knows where that goes. You know, they just, at this point, are really paying the price for a lot of the, you know, the strip mining of the farm system that was made in an effort to try to win. And you hope that everybody in the organization understands that that was a calculated decision, but they're paying for it.
Buster, this must be the Heim Bloom effect, because the platoons that the Red Sox are running are really interesting. I can't figure it out on either end, because Mitch Moreland only plays against righties and Chavis only plays against lefties. Moreland's got the hot hand. He sits. Chavis is the young guy we're supposed to be getting evaluating. He sits. I can't figure out what exactly the plan is here.
And that's why Ron Renneke was asked in a radio interview in Boston today, okay, who's making out the lineups? Look, you know, if you watch the Rays in recent years, under Heim Bloom, Eric Neander, that's the sort of thing that they would do on a daily basis. And I think it's easy to do, easier to do, I should say, with younger players who aren't established. I just in watching, and I don't know how you guys felt about it, but just in watching the body language of guys like Xander Bogaerts and J.D. Martinez, et cetera, you wonder how it's going to go over the course of the whole season. And I do, you know, they're so bad early on, I actually think it probably is going to free them up to make some moves, you know, maybe to, you know, trade away a guy like Brandon Workman, trade a guy like Barnes if he has some value. And I even wonder, and this is total speculation on my part, now that you have a universal DH in the National League, I wonder if J.D. Martinez, if you're sitting in the front office of the Boston Red Sox and you know that, you know, you're probably going to be a couple years away from turning it around at the same time that JD's contract's going to expire. I certainly would be out there, you know, kind of poking around and seeing if there's some team that would be willing to take on a lot of the money. I can't imagine you find any team that would be willing to take on the whole contract. But you do wonder if the fact that they look so bad early is going to make them more aggressive as we go along.
Buster, you mentioned Bogaerts, Xander Bogaerts being so disgruntled. And at the time he did it, they were 1-3. I mean, it's awfully early. I know it's a short season, but four games in, and he's already calling out the pitching staff. I mean, what is your reaction to him doing that?
It was a surprise on one hand, but if you see the body language, if you see, you know, the fact that every night it seems like they're down by 20 runs before they come to the plate, I'm not surprised. The only thing is, and Xander is a great guy, and he's uniformly positive, you know, for the most part, and he's always, you know, a guy walks in with a smile on his face. But I think my question would be, if, and I'm guessing Ron Renneke or Heim Bloom might talk to him today, like, you know, Xander, that's good that you're going to mention the lack of pitching that we have here. But here's the deal. Like, these are the guys we got.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to change. I remember when Lou Piniella was the manager of the Tampa Bay Rays, Devil Rays, he would, if one of the Rays pitchers was getting, this is when the Rays were really bad, and there would be night after night to be watching, and these guys who really were AAA pitchers were getting absolutely destroyed, and he'd be raging in the dugout. And I remember thinking, how does that help anybody?
Hmm.
Like, for someone to be that angry. You know, and how does it help the pitcher? And I got to believe that, you know, Xander, who's such a good person, upon reflection, probably would have handled it differently.
Buster Olney of ESPN. Buster, I'll get you out of here on two quick ones. This is a fun one. We're going to cause you to make a prediction here. My dad's a White Sox fan. I'm a Mariners fan. Rich is a Red Sox fan. We're all 1-4. Who ends up with the most wins at the end of the season between our three teams?
Oh, boy. Gosh.
That's how bad they are. He can't even come up with an answer.
No, I have a definite here.
Yeah. White Sox.
Yeah. That's the one.
It better be the White Sox. They spent all that money. But, God, our teams are unwatchable right now, Buster.
They are really unwatchable. That's why the other day someone tweeted at me who was an Astros fan, said Astros are the best team in baseball, And it was after two games against the Mariners, and that's what my response was. Really? You're going to base that on two games against the worst team in baseball?
Exactly. Buster, I'll get you out of here on this. The debate is raging on our Facebook page. Do you call it miniature golf or putt-putt?
Miniature golf.
Thank you.
By the way, I've never played because we were the most boring family in the history of the world. We never left Randolph Center. To this date, I've never played miniature golf.
Wow. Have you played regular golf?
Yes. And I stopped in 1997 because I do not have the temperament for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Buster, thank you. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, guys. Thanks.
Thanks.
I can't believe Buster's never played miniature golf. How have you never played miniature golf?
I know. That's almost impossible. Well, Randolph Center is fairly sheltered.
Where would the closest miniature golf course to Randolph Center be? Is there one in Barrie?
Oh, I do not know the answer to that. I mean,
Williamstown?
Growing up in the 70s, there's the only ones around here, the one I remember most was at Broad Acres.
I don't know where that is.
That's in Mallett's Bay. It's now an ice cream
stand. That's over an hour away from Randolph Center.
I do not have the answer, but you're right. There's got to be a mini golf somewhere in central Vermont, maybe White River.
And Buster lives near New York City now. There's not a whole lot of miniature golf going on down there either. I can't believe, but Buster also, he covered the Orioles for a while. Yeah. I mean, he's been in Maryland. There's got to be miniature golf in Maryland.
Of course. I mean, that used to be a big thing. Just like drive-in movies used to be a big thing and roller skating.
And these people on our Facebook page, some of them that still insist on calling it mini putt. No, most
never
of the people
heard it.
Have never even heard of that.
Nope, it's just mini golf.
So 802-655-6672. Really interesting when he was talking about the idea that Heim Bloom is the one making the lineup card for the Red Sox. I had wondered that also. I hadn't wondered how it would play in the clubhouse, though, because he's talking about the body language on some of these veteran players. They may not be liking this new direction, and that is something to monitor.
Yeah, and I heard him talking on the broadcast on the station last night, just in the pregame show. And I don't know if you heard the pregame show.
Some of it, not all.
I liked it because it was basically 60 minutes of them just bashing the Red Sox, and that just doesn't happen on the radio network of the team.
Yeah.
So it was kind of nice. And talking about how Ron Renicki already four games in, is just basically a puppet for the front office, and he just reeks of a guy who knows his role as a one-year stopgap bridge manager for a team that's really bad.
But isn't this what we asked for? Isn't this what we asked for as fans, though? Or if you were a Red Sox fan, isn't this what you asked for?
What do you mean by that? Just baseball in general?
No, to get rid of the outdated way of thinking, the massive spending, the huge contracts. You want to find the diamonds in the rough. You've seen how good the Rays are. You want to build it up like they have, where you can do it without forking over $280 million every time that you have to. Don't you then have to give it? I mean, I don't want to be a hypocrite. Don't you have to give it more than five games then?
Yes, you do. And that's why the thing is, the problem with the Red Sox right now is that pitching staff it's not a bunch of young potential double-A phenoms going here. I look at it, and I've said this 100 times. I'll say it again. It's just a bunch of 30-year-old journeyman has-beens who have never had any success anywhere with 7 ERAs. And that's the problem here. That's not how the Tampa Bay Rays built their team. They built it through the draft. And they started them at Hudson Valley, and they decimate the, you know, and they'd move right on up, and they'd have 22-year-old phenoms, you know, Kazmir, Blake Snell.
If you're the Red Sox, then what you're saying is that if you're going to only wait for the draft, you're going to be waiting 6-8 years for this to materialize. Right. That's not going to fly.
Well, no, it won't fly there, and that's the thing that's good about it is I would assume their down years are going to be 500 years. You can't have guys like Bogarts and Devers and J.D. Martinez in a batting order, and potentially, if he ever starts hitting, Benintendi, guys like that. Their down years in Boston are going to be 500 seasons. That's why everybody's kind of alarmed at the start.
I would be interested in trading J.D. Martinez.
Absolutely.
I mean, so he's got a five-year deal. This is year three of it.
Yes.
But he's got opt-outs after every year. So that's why it's tough for a team to acquire him, because you don't know what his status is, because he could just opt out. So if the DH stays in the NL, he becomes a massively interesting trade piece for the entire league. But we still don't know that it's going to.
That's the key to this. It's the last part of that sentence you just said. You can't, if you're the Mets, Phillies, whatever, any National League team, you can't take that risk of grabbing J.D. Martinez and then being stuck with him in right field for starting next year.
And I'm not going to undersell on J.D. Martinez either, because the Red Sox don't have a lot of leverage, right? Like, I'd consider moving him. I'd listen to offers, but team says, hey, I'm not renting a player for, I mean, how many games here? 30 games this season? This isn't even a typical rent-a-player year. I'm not renting a player, so I'm not giving you a ton for a rent-a-player. I have no idea if he's going to opt in, so I don't know that I'm buying him for 2 years or 3 years. I also don't know that he's not going to be a liability to me on defense. I don't see, even though he's so good, I don't see teams lining up to give you the kind of prospects that you would even want for him. So as much as I'm willing to entertain offers, I don't know that there's ever going to be anything that comes out suitable for me when it comes to Martinez.
Oh, by the way, no mini golf in Central Vermont. Mike in South Hero says there's a mini golf in West Lebanon, New Hampshire. We're talking about like 1975 here. That's the only reason I brought Acres up, because that was in the 70s and 80s around here. I couldn't tell you about mini golf in the 70s and 80s.
I want to get back to one last thing on the Red Sox. Oh. Sorry.
Sorry just to change the subject.
No, it's okay. Just one last thing. I don't get why Chavis is not playing more.
Yeah, find out what he... Well, see what you have.
I mean, he is not hitting. I don't believe he has a hit the entire season. So I get that. But if he's the young guy, he's one of the youthful guys that you have, why aren't you seeing what he's got? I get it. They think he can only hit lefties. I seem to recall him up last year hitting a bunch of home runs early. I'm sure some of them were against right-handed pitchers. Can't you find out what he's got? I don't even love Chavis. But if you're going to be bad, you might as well be bad with 24-year-olds
right.
than be bad with Mitch Moreland.
Right. Well, that goes back to what I just said. I mean, I would much rather be bad with a bunch of guys, you know, that played in Portland last year. The problem is there is no minor league system. There's just not that calling card, sure thing, can't miss blue chipper to bring up and throw him into a situation where the team is bad. And, well, give him five starts because it doesn't matter. They don't have those kind of guys. They haven't proven anything at the lower level. So I throw them out there to get destroyed at the major league level. By the way, Chavis is 0-for-9, just to back up.
Yeah, I told
you,
he doesn't have a hit.
Right. Well, he literally doesn't have a hit.
It's hard to get in a rhythm when you're only playing every other day or you're only trusted to play against left-handers. Right. And I'm sure he's not going to play tonight against DeGrom.
He isn't. Moreland's batting fourth.
Yeah, so he's going to play against DeGrom. And then when they go and see whoever pitches tomorrow for the Mets, then Chavis won't play again if it's a righty.
Yeah. Well, oh, by the way, what'd you think? I forgot. I wanted to ask you. I've got to love having Buster on here, you know, as this breaks about the Marlins, about Joe Kelly. I think eight games. I'm not surprised. We talked about it right at the outset of the show. I think eight games is appropriate.
8 out of 60 is essentially 1/6 of the season. In a normal year, that would be.
Actually 1/7, but anyway.
8 out of 60? Well, 10 out of 60 would be 1/6, right? So it's close.
Well, 8 into 60 is what, 6.5?
Okay, so how about this? It's close. So
I just wanted to be better than you in some sort of math
there
situation.
You go. Hey, that's fine. Math is not my strong
suit. There's never an opportunity to do that with anyone.
I mean, it's akin to like 20 games in a real season. Yeah. It feels too much. I do think he threw it, Bregman. I do.
Yeah, and at 96. Oh, yeah, 96 miles an hour at his head.
I don't think he threw a Correa.
Fine. And I think that's fine. And that was just an 80 mile an hour pitch?
86.
Yeah, but that's fine. But you cannot throw 96 mile an hour fastballs at a guy's head on a 3-0 count.
If it were a regular season and he gave 20 games for that, do you think that would have been appropriate? 20 games?
No, that would have been too high.
Okay,
but
so
I would have said maybe 10 to 15.
You're proportionally giving me the same amount right here, though.
What I'm saying is it doesn't surprise me. We said right from the start of the show that it's somewhere between 5 and 10 games wouldn't surprise me.
When Joe Kelly threw at Tyler Austin a couple years ago for the Yankees, it was one of the most entertaining games of the season. My brother was at that game.
And what has Tyler Austin done since then? That's his claim to fame.
He was with the Twins.
Yep.
He was with the Twins. All right, let's take a break, Rich. When we come back, I figured it out. The key to happiness. I found out what the key to happiness is.
Boy, these 5 o'clock hours are getting more fun every day.
We'll see. The key to happiness. You're all going to need to stick around for it. That's next, 101.3 The Game.
He's been here forever.
Was a center, then a forward, then a guard, then the ball boy.
He's one of you.
I put on some hydrogen peroxide in my hair for one day, and I had orange hair for 3 weeks.
It's Rich Haskell.
Wawity, wawity, wallaka, zallaka, zoo, witty, woo, witty, witch.
On The Huddle.
And we're off.
On 101.3 The Game.
Welcome back. back here in the huddle, 101.3 The Game, 101.3thegame.com.
That's a true story about the hydrogen peroxide. I won $50 for doing it.
You won $50?
Somebody dared me to put hydrogen peroxide. This is an 86.
You know what? What one of the grossest things I ever saw somebody dared to do that they actually did was? No joke. And you could never do this now in the time of coronavirus at all. I was at midnight bowling once, and this was before we were old enough to drink. So no one was drinking. I was in high school, I think,
okay,
at the time. And it was two people that got called up at midnight bowling at like 2 in the morning, and they didn't know each other. It was my friend who was a guy and then a girl that we didn't know, and he sucked her big toe in the bowling alley straight out of bowling shoes.
Oh.
And like it was some kind of dare from the midnight bowling guy who was hosting it. He like won like a T-shirt for it.
I mean, that would be relatively odd, but not completely out there if it weren't for the bowling shoes.
I mean, it's gross no matter what. It's somebody's big toe that you don't know. It's not like it's your girlfriend or your best friend.
Just some random person.
It's just like, hey, the person on lane 3, the person on lane 20, why don't you just come over here and we'll dare you to do something.
Well, you know how some of these DJs are at these events. They'll do anything.
2 in the morning, Clifton Park, New York, you're trying to get a guy to suck a random girl's big toe. I could have done without that. Looking back, that's one of the grosser things I've ever seen in my
life. So that didn't make you happy?
No, it did not. No. Oh, my God, yeah. The key to happiness. Did you read this?
I did not. And I should, because I'm one of them.
The key to happiness is, according to research, having variety in your daily routine, including exploring your neighborhood each day. This will make research says that exploring your neighborhood or having variety in your daily routine will make you happier. That's interesting. I believe that, yes. But for you, you said you like your day cookie cutter. The same, the same, the same.
Yeah,
I thought routine made you happy.
Right. Well, it's the same, but it's a whole bunch of different things that are the same. I mean, it's like once Saturday comes, the whole routine completely changes to an extreme. But the weekdays are generally mixed between Orange Theory, Uber Eats, working in the morning, working in the afternoon.
But you're not doing a lot of different things. You're doing a lot of the same.
Right. It's those four things.
So you're not really exploring. You're not really trying. So basically this is saying trying new things makes you happy. You don't try a lot of new things.
Well, no, vacations I do. I hate
Doesn't everybody though?
No, but I hate backtracking. I hate going to somewhere and then having to turn around and take the same route back. You know what I mean? It's like. Like that last vacation I had a couple weeks ago. We were just out looking for towns we'd never been in.
You know,
but you're right. That's a vacation. That's not the daily routine by any stretch. And when they say in that explore your neighborhood, does the neighborhood mean Vermont? Or does it mean where the street you live on?
I think it just means your general surrounding area. I think there's a lot of people that can fly by the seat of their pants and they find happiness in just trying all kinds of new things. I do think there's a large amount of people, though, and I'd be interested in the text line, 802-655-6672. I think there's a lot of people that do find happiness in routine. They find happiness in comfort, and with a routine comes that comfort. So I think there's a lot of people that would probably disagree with this study.
Lester in Huntington, you know if it's Lester, it's going to be something funny. The key to happiness, no Arnie.
Oh.
I got news for you, Lester. It's all coming to an end.
Arnie will be back tomorrow.
Today is it.
Rich and I have held the fort down, we think, but Arnie will be back tomorrow. And then we're not going to be together again for a long time.
I know. The bloviating windbag is back.
Rich is on vacation next week.
The week after,
I'm on vacation in 3 weeks, so we'll actually have 1 week together.
So basically, it's going to be, for the most part, other than tomorrow and Friday, a two-man show.
Well, no. I got 1 week in between, so...
All right. So you're going later.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm going 1 week later than I had originally thought. You know what's hard for me when they talk about getting out and trying new things? It's hard for me to just be in the moment. It's hard for me to just focus on what I'm doing then. My mind is always racing. And it's always racing about a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. But like last night, I'm watching the Red Sox game. I'm thinking of work. All night long, I'm thinking, okay, here's what I'm talking about tomorrow. Here's this, here's that. I read this, I saw that. It's hard for me to just be in the moment. That's something I wish I was better at.
Yeah, you mentioned this on the show last Friday. It was a fascinating discussion we had about how you're unable to process other stuff. And
Like shut off work.
Like, yeah, you're always thinking about work. And we talked about how I was completely the opposite of that.
Yeah.
As soon as I go out the front door and down those steps to my car, work doesn't exist for me.
My least favorite thing about myself, and I bet you there's a lot of people that do this now, My least favorite thing about myself is that when I'm watching the game, I find myself in my phone far too much. And I don't want to be. But I want to see what other people are saying. And I want to see, because if I'm watching the Red Sox game and I have a thought, I want to tweet it, and then I want to go and see what are other people saying. So that way it becomes a conversation piece for the show. If 50 people are wondering why this is happening, that's something we should be talking about in the show. And I can't shut it off, right. And I wish that I could.
I think I'll have the same answer as I did last Friday to that. My response will be that I think it's generational. Let me correct that. Not generational. It's something that as you get older, especially like me, who's been doing the same thing for four decades, you're able to just shut that completely away. Because 20 years ago, my whole life was, how can we be better on the radio? How can we get ratings? How can we make lots of money?
See, and that's where I am now.
And that's the way, it was an obsession up until I hit about when Miranda arrived. As soon as the child arrived.
Funny how that happens.
Yeah, all of a sudden, radio didn't seem like that big of a deal. And it's not that it isn't a big deal, but it's basically this wonderful hobby that I get paid for. And you have to you don't realize that until you're later in life.
See, yeah, for me right now, it's just a complete livelihood thing. Like, it just feels like if I'm not thinking about it, then we're missing an opportunity. And I'm always just thinking, okay, what can we put on social media? What can we put on Twitter? What can we put on Twitch? What can we do for the show? What can we do? What guests are we going to get?
Right.
So I spend more time at night thinking about what guests we're going to get on the show than you talk about things that take up a lot of your day. Booking guests, I've said it before, it's my favorite and least favorite part of this job.
Well, plus the fact that you have a bigger, much bigger responsibility here than either Arnie or I do. I mean, you're the program director. You have to make sure all this stuff you hear in between, all these things that go on, all the re-entries and the promos and all these things you hear, that's mostly you, although it's the interns too.
Yes, the interns are excellent.
But it's mostly coming from your brain. Arnie and I kind of just show up at 2 o'clock and do what we do.
You guys give me a little too much credit and take too much credit away from yourself. Because, I mean, we get a lot of, you guys, and you're sending links all day long. Arnie's addicted to sports radio. I mean, he's listening to Clay, Dan, and Colin all day long.
Yes,
so he's another one that doesn't turn work off very often.
Right. I seem to be the only one in this crew that does.
And again, I told you, I admire that quality. It's hard for me to have it, and I don't have it.
I can assure you, as I'm on one of the rail trails in St. Jay or wherever, I'm not thinking about how this affects the radio show.
I like what Jason said. The key to happiness is a balance between trying new things and your routine. Mm-hmm. That's probably fair. You like things that are comfortable. You like things that are familiar. But you also like stepping outside the comfort zone every once in a while and seeing something different or looking at something in a different perspective. Rich, I'm reminded of something earlier in the show. We had Ernie Duncan on, former UVM basketball star, and we asked him, why did you not go play professionally? And this was his answer. Kind of ties in.
And I have a lot of good things happening in my life, and I'm very happy here in Vermont at the moment. I have a lot of good things working in my direction, so I really don't want to mess with my happiness. And that's something that I kind of learned, with my time at UVM, is when you're happy, kind of keep riding that wave and don't really interrupt that happiness.
Yeah, and that's an important thing for him.
Yeah.
Personally, absolutely.
I thought it was a really good interview. And Ernie started his own basketball training company, Ernie Duncan Hoops LLC. You can go and get lessons from him. He's got a website and everything, and it's a full-time business for him. But he said, look, I didn't want to leave. I was happy here. And so he's found his own key to happiness. And I think a lot of people are trying to figure out what that is. And again, a lot of work makes me happy. I don't regret being how I am, but I do wish at times I could put the phone away and just watch the game.
Not to mention that 3:45 alarm clock for me. I got to admit, every now and then, that's not something that appeals to me. but I mean, it's like that old Ben and Jerry's bumper sticker that we used to see around Vermont. Maybe it's still out there. Says, if it isn't fun, why do it? I'm just thinking to myself, it's a bumper sticker, of course, but it's true. It's absolutely true. And some of the other ones, a lot of people are talking about the fact that they're agreeing with you. Oh, whoops, Crawdaddy says it's gas bag, Arnie, not wind bag. Yeah, I was calling him the bloviating wind bag. So apparently gas bag is worse than wind bag. Jason Williston says, hey, I wish I could turn work off when I left. And he says, but the fact that I don't maybe is why I keep getting promoted.
No, that's probably, and Jason's about my age, so I think we have the same mentality that if you're not working hard or not working, somebody is working hard and that you're always going to feel like you've left something on the table. And that's something that I personally can't handle, and I wish that I could.
Right, and it's fun getting a little bit older, although there's not much fun about approaching 60 and how I ever got to 60 when I think I'm 25. I have no idea. But the fact is the responsibilities start to fade a little bit. And my job here now is very cookie cutter. Come in, same time, do the same thing every day. I mean, obviously the newscasts and the sportscasts in the morning are always different. And coming in on the various radio stations and saying whatever they want to talk about is different. But for the most part, the other people are making the decisions about what we're going to do. And you certainly see that in your role here at the station.
I want to pawn guest booking off on you. On you. That's what I want. I want you to take that responsibility.
Today we'll have the governor. Tomorrow we'll talk with one of my drinking buddies at the poorhouse.
This is not new. I always accuse Arnie of repeating the same story. I've said this before. Booking guests is the most exhilarating and most taxing job simultaneously that I have.
Now, why is that? What is it? Because it's a lot of callbacks and a lot of maybes.
It's the highest of highs when you get a big name or when you get a run of big names. There is no better feeling in doing this than bringing somebody that your listeners aren't expecting. Like we've had a lot of great guests on Carlton Fisk and Dan Duquette and Hall of Fame. Tomorrow we got Takiyo Spikes on. He's a 2-time All-Pro linebacker. And that interview took over a week for me to set up. Wow. I'm pumped about that interview. And I'm excited to bring it to our listeners. That's a high. But when you strike out, and sometimes you strike out repeatedly, you shoot for the stars and you end up 0-3, and you end up with a guestless day. And some days we plan to be guestless days, but other days we didn't. That's a frustrating feeling. And then the worst is when you got like 10 feelers out there, and then all 10 respond. You're trying to figure out, okay, now who do I have to get rid of that already said yes?
Well, you know what? It's funny because you talk about happy and sad and what makes you angry and stuff. The one thing I just cannot get past, and it's gotten a lot worse since Ubering, is road rage. I just can't get past it. Isn't that weird, though? I'm like the calmest guy, and I love every second of my life, and everything's great, and I just wish I could live to 1,000 and... But when somebody does something stupid behind the wheel, it freaks me out. I tell myself not to do it at the time. So it's not like not everybody has this 100% idyllic life.
See, I don't have that. I don't get road rage at all. I don't get mad very often. Yeah, I've learned to just not sweat the small stuff. I didn't get hit by the car, so generally I'm okay. That stuff doesn't bother me. That what bothers me about myself is just that my mind is always racing and I can't shut it off. I mean, I woke up at like 7:20 this morning, 20 minutes before my alarm, and right when I woke up, I was like, okay, what's on the show today?
Right
away. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even eat my cereal yet, and it was what's on the show today.
One thing that you may not be happy about, according to Jeff and Shelburne, it's pouring in Essex. There goes your golf round.
I hope not.
There goes that happiness, as he put it.
Well, Jeff and Shelburne's the guy that sold me the clubs, so I need to be able to do it. So I don't know.
Golf clubs rust?
I imagine that they can, but these ones haven't. They're nice clubs.
I knew that was Rich giving me the finger the other day. On the text line.
I would never,
ever do that because there are consequences for giving someone the finger that I'd rather not find out about. See, I'm all this real tough guy as long as I'm anonymous. I'm always calling these people anonymous tough guys on the text line. But behind the wheel, that's me.
Oliver goes, Brady, you have to set an alarm to wake up at 7:20. He's implying that I sleep late. Oliver, I'm up until like 1 watching sports most days. So, yes, I generally stay up later and wake up by like 7:30. Yes, funny. I don't feel bad for that. So.
That is funny.
All right, when we come back, we'll wrap up the show. Last story standing. That's next, 101.3 The Game.
Wacky or insightful? We've saved the best for last. It's time for Last Story Standing on The Huddle on 101.3 The Game.
Welcome back here to The Huddle, 101.3 The Game, 101.3thegame.com. Arnie back tomorrow. Last story standing, Rich. You've got this one. It's a local story gone viral nationally.
It did. I heard it all over the place on the national news. We talked about it a lot here this morning.
Oh,
whether he's right or wrong.
That I didn't want to do. Sorry. My bad.
Ow.
Sorry. Did not want that. That was going to be a Colin Cowherd promo. We didn't need that yet.
Hopefully I'm right and not wrong here, but no, this actually happened. You may have heard about it. West Addison?
I've heard of it.
Yes, right by the lake. down in Addison County. Guy jumps out of a plane. They have a skydiving place down there.
Yes.
It's Vermont Skydiving Adventures in West Addison, the last thing on earth. You talk about things that make you happy. That would not give me happiness.
Skydiving?
Do you want to jump out of a plane?
Mary Sensi did it. My brother did it. And no, I don't want to.
We had Mary on the show live doing the jump.
Hot air balloons would freak me out even more, though.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm terrified of hot air balloons.
I can barely drive over a bridge. I'm so scared of heights. Anyway, the skydiver who lost his prosthetic leg during a jump.
Oh, my God.
Now has it back. Thanks
did it
to
fall out of the sky and hit somebody?
No, but it landed in a soybean field in Addison County, and the farmer found it.
A prosthetic leg falling from that height could probably break your roof.
Oh, I think it would probably cause all kinds of damage. Those things are not light, I think.
Isn't the thing like a penny dropped from the top of the Empire State Building would like destroy a car or something?
Right. The guy's name, and I hope I got it right, Chris Marcris.
Okay.
Went for a jump this past Saturday, Vermont Skydiving Adventures, right there in West Addison. Lost one of his prosthetic legs after leaping from the plane while harnessed to an instructor.
Oh, yeah, that's how they do it. Yeah. They harness you to the instructor.
Right.
I don't even like doing the things at like carnivals where they're just like the giant slingshot and they just propel. I don't want to do that either.
Well, Marcus said his adrenaline was so high he didn't even realize his leg had fallen off.
So you get down.
Anything could happen to me at 5,000 feet or whatever. I wouldn't know it either because I would be, first of all, in convulsions, and secondly, probably passed out. But apparently he stayed awake. When he spread the word on social media about the missing prosthetic, farmer Joe Marzalkowski saw the post, kept an eye out, and he found it in the soybean field.
Well, I'm glad that the leg is back with its rightful owner, Rich. It's on the radio tonight.
Red Sox baseball, they give it another try. First road game of the year. They're at Citi Field tonight. Pregame show at 6:10, Mets and Red Sox.
By the way, real quick, I feel bad for our listener, Milo, in North Troy, because 150,000 people have decided that name works better for a dog than a human.
Oh.
Also included in that list are Buddy, Milo, Ginger, Bo, Bruno, Tucker, Coco, Marley, Trixie, and Roscoe.
Do you know any humans with that name?
Roscoe Parrish was the old punt returner for the Bills, used to play for Miami. Up the U. Shout out the U.
That's about the only one.
Roscoe Parrish. I don't know any humans named Trixie, and I do know Coco Crisp, he of Red Sox.
Oh, that's right.
He of Red Sox fame. So, full show podcast, Apple Podcast, and on Spotify. Thanks to the interns, intern Quentin, intern Sarah, intern Patrick. Appreciate all of them. Arnie is back tomorrow. I can only imagine the stories he'll have about the RV experience with his brother. See you tomorrow, everybody. See ya.